Good evening and welcome to the Arroyo Grande City Council meeting for Tuesday, September 13th, 2016. We are at the South County Regional Center, our temporary location here. And may we have a roll call, please?
Councilmember Guthrie?
Here.
Councilmember Brown?
Here.
Councilmember Barnidge?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Harmon?
Here.
And Mayor Hill?
Here. Please join us in a moment of reflection. Thank you. This evening, to help with the flag salute, we have the Arroyo Grande Kiwanis Club in appropriate attire for the Harvest Festival and McCracken.
Oh, testing, 1, 2, 3. All right, I'd like to ask all of you to put aside all of your thoughts outside of this room tonight. Let's think about 9/11 and those that we lost 15 years ago, what they stood for, what we stand for, and we are all on the same path to our goals. So let's remember that tonight as we place our hand over our hearts and lead in the flag salute. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Okay, what is Kiwanis doing? I was just reminded by Jeff that we have 9 more days to the Harvest Festival. Are you all on board? You have your costumes? I have 5 more hats I am willing to loan you. Throw on a jacket. Would you like a hat?
I'd like a hat.
I'll pay you $100 to wear one of these hats.
I'll do it.
To go to your favorite charity. Okay, we want that at the opening ceremonies, right, Mayor?
Absolutely.
Right at the fish fry at 5:30. You got everybody witnessing this? Will you all be there? Okay, we're going to do that. That's going to be a hoot.
It better be a good hat.
Well, it's one of these. You can have red, white, pink. Okay. All right. So just a quick announcement. I'm going to go ahead and say it tonight. Our grand marshal this year is Elsie Cicchetti. I don't know how many of you know Elsie.
Way to go, Linda.
Just very briefly, she started driving the children to school in, what year was that? In a pickup truck.
About
1950-something or other. I met her in 79, still driving, and I think she didn't retire till, gosh knows, I retired in 91. So we're going to honor her tonight. Her and George live out, or her and George, she still lives out there on Lopez Drive. And we'll go into a lot of that the night of the Harvest Festival at the opening ceremony. But we've got our baking contest going on. We got Whiskerino. Come as you are for Whiskerino. There's no pre-registration. Our Kiwanis Club is putting on the parade as usual. And we, I believe, are up to about almost 70 entries. So we are thrilled. We have a really good balance of political candidates. We need to do that. We want to be fair to everybody. So come and enjoy. Mary, anything I'm forgetting? Okay. After that, we're going to beg pardon. Come and see Mary in our booth. We're going to have hot dogs over there by the dog thing going on. What'd you say? Heritage Square Park. Yes, ma'am. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Ann.
Signing off.
Okay, our agenda review this evening. We have no closed session announcements. Can we move that all ordinances presented for introduction or adoption be read in title only and all further readings be waived?
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Passes unanimously. Any other questions or concerns with the agenda?
No.
Hearing none. Special presentations. This evening we have a special presentation from the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments on Pledge to Make a Smart Commute Choice during Rideshare Week, October 3rd to 7th. Welcome.
Good evening, Mayor Hill, council members, and Arroyo Grande. My name is Peter Williamson. I'm the Employer Outreach Coordinator at SLOCOG. SLOCOG is our county's agency responsible for transportation planning and funding. And my program, the Back and Forth Club, works with county employers to encourage employees to make smart commute choices. I'm here to invite everyone to join me in pledging to make a smart commute choice during Rideshare Week, which is October 3rd through the 7th. A smart commute is any alternative to driving alone in your car, such as carpooling, walking, taking the bus, renting an electric bike, new this year from a Cal Poly startup. And Rideshare Week is about getting people, not cars, to work. It's not a mode, it's a movement. So pretend you're at home watching Netflix. I'm going to roll a little promo. You can take this extra minute here to go to supercommuter.org and start pledging. You get the idea. It's a pretty good message. I'm going to switch.
We go places.
You can check out the video at supercommuter.org. It is definitely worth it. All right. Back to me. Sorry, everyone. So, pledge to make a smart commute choice, supercommuter.org, and you won't be alone because we'll be all over the county asking our daily commuters to pledge along with you to make smart commute choices. I'll be at the AG Hospital on Tuesday the 27th, notably, but we'll be at a lot of other places, as you can see there, too. And then starting Monday, October 3rd, we will continue our outreach and make those smart commute choices we committed to, right, everyone? Employees throughout the county will receive cubicle checklists to display their efforts, and so it kind of looks like this. You'll check the days that you're making those choices, and we hope that this will generate some conversation in the workplace. If you have employees, we hope you'll distribute this checklist and the posters and maybe do something special for your employees that make smart commute choices that week. And for the events listed, we will have our transportation providers and partners on site doing giveaways and promoting their service. And I'll be giving away action-based incentives so employees can earn a calendar mouse pad for joining iRideShare.org, which is our region's ride matching software. They can earn sun visors for making their carpool official or spoke lights for posting a bike mentorship opportunity. And the providers listed are also doing week-long promos, including free slow bus rides, discounted week-long bike rentals from Boltabout, and also a VanPool sign-up bonus from Enterprise. And our Rideshare Week challenge this year is challenging employers to become one of our county's best workplaces for commuters. Get your employer involved at iRideShare.org. Employees log their smart commute choices, and every smart commute choice helps your employer win. The winning employer from each category will receive a paid Best Workplaces for Commuters membership and designation. That's a national designation, which is pretty cool. We'll be breaking it down by size, as you can see, and also by the percentage of your employees participating. So definitely a good chance you can win if you're getting everyone involved. And to compete, employers do need to be in the Back and Forth Club, which is free, by contacting me. And then parents, October 5th is National Walk to School Day. So get out there and walk to school for sure with your kids. Lucia Mara Schools engaging so far include Dana, Harlow, Ocean View, Oceano, and Shell Beach Elementary. If your school isn't listed, we'd love to hear from you. Thank you for pledging to make a smart commute choice during Rideshare Week at supercommuter.org. And if you want to get more involved or have questions, I have some cards as well as some posters to put up around the workplace. And additional thanks to the council for letting me present this evening. Any questions?
Questions? No questions. Thank you very much, Peter. We appreciate the good report and the good effort there.
Thanks again.
Yes, I will be sharing a ride into the power plant, as usual. Brings us to item number 7, community comments and suggestions. Any member of the public is welcome to come up at this time. And if you have any items to address the council, this would be on items that are not on the agenda this evening. For those items that are on the agenda this evening, we'll have an opportunity for comment as the council takes up each of those items. So if you have any items that are not on the agenda this evening, please come forward.
Yes, please.
Good evening, Mayor Hill and council members. My name is David Kahn, and I'm chair of the Five Cities Diversity Coalition. And you may recall that I came a little more than a year ago to tell you about a project of public art. We're in the process of preparing a sculpture that was designed by high school students with the help of a professional artist. And I'm pleased to report that we're moving along really fast with this. The sculpture is a tree, the top of which is a globe. The globe was ordered from a company actually in Chicago. It's the only place we could get what we needed. And it is well underway. In fact, it's supposed to be in shipment now, so it could arrive any day. The sculpture is going to be placed right outside the entrance to AG High School, where it'll be clearly visible not only to the high schoolers, but hopefully to the community at large, those going to the Clark Center or just going by. And it's going to represent a really good statement of the importance of inclusiveness and diversity here in the community. As I say, the globe will be arriving soon. The space that it will occupy actually was previously occupied by a tree. Unfortunately, that tree has had to go. It has gone, which means progress again. And we're hoping that the installation will take place sometime in the next, well, we're not exactly sure, but maybe in the next couple of months. And we'll have an appropriate ceremony to which I'm sure you'll all be invited and hope you'll all show up. We're still in the final stages of our fundraising. We've raised a lot of money, probably more than $12,000, but we still have some way to go. And at this point, among other things, we're approaching the three cities that are part of the coalition, so AG and Grover Beach and Pismo. And we're kind of hoping that we might, between the three, raise as much as $6,000. That would be really helpful because it would take us over the top, make sure that we can fully pay for everything involved with the sculpture, and also a plaque that will be going along with the sculpture. We met with your acting city manager the other day and had a very good conversation, and we felt that it would be good to come along and tell you about our progress and make the request and answer any questions you might have. One of the students who is one of the designers of the sculpture is standing right behind me, is going to say a little bit about her experience, and then another coalition member will be speaking about the coalition more generally. So with that, I'll stop and see if you have any questions. I would be pleased to answer them. We'll try to answer them.
Not at this time. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Gabriela Santiago, and I'm one of the student designers for the Five Cities Diversity Coalition sculpture. And I just wanted to share some of my experiences I had with participating in this project. When I was a senior in high school at Arroyo Grande, I was introduced to this project, and it was a perfect way for me to be involved with art and the community, and it encouraged me to participate in the community in this unique way. And I was introduced to the Five Cities Diversity Coalition, and I've met amazing students and artists and other locals. This process has been very long and educational. I've learned how to collaborate with others artistically, how to express myself, and I've found that this expression is going to benefit the community very much, and I'm very excited to be a part of something that's going to be long-lasting. I find that a lot of high schoolers and young people are somewhat apathetic by nature, and this project kind of allowed me to leave behind that apathy because I was able to express myself artistically, and I'm very excited to participate in something that conveys the powerful message of diversity. The sculpture itself, as David described, is a tree, and the tree has five roots, one root for each city, and that's where the symbolism begins, and from there the roots grow into a tree which pulls together the world. Which I feel definitely portrays diversity here in our five cities. It is titled Arboring the Roots of Our Diversity, and it's a unique visualization of our five cities. Diversity as a community makes us strong, and in the face of adversity, we grow together. And in conclusion, I hope that this sculpture will convey that message to future students and leaders and artists, and I hope that encourages tolerance, compassion, artistic expression, and participation in our fantastic community. So, thank you.
Thank you very much for sharing your experience there.
Good evening. I'm Joe Whitaker. As a relatively new member of the coalition, I thought I would take just another moment or two of your time to put the coalition's efforts in perspective. It was formed 5 years ago with the expressed mission, and I quote, to provide programs and resources promoting and celebrating inclusion and affirmation of diversity in our community and responding to and countering any instances of bias or prejudice against our citizens, a topic which I think we can all agree that sadly is more relevant now even than in most times in America. The coalition has a belief that to reach individuals and discuss this very important issue of what it means to be different in any respect in a community, that we have to reach them when they're young, before their core beliefs are hardened or set in stone. Therefore, looking forward to the next 5 years, one of our main goals will be to expand the existing speakership program in middle schools and high schools, where guest speakers are invited to talk to these young men and women about anti-bullying and what Dr. Cornell Morton says in a treatise called Microaggressions. We want to expand the number of such seminars, discussions, talks, presentations, whatever you want to term them. We also want to provide the tools and resources to teachers themselves so that they can talk to their students. And last, but just as important, we will institute a quick response network so that when incidents of significant bias do occur, hopefully not often, we will take immediate steps to see that the local media knows about it, letters to the editor, op-eds, and expand the forum to any appropriate group, including, of course, city councils. With your support and the support of the other cities and private sector, the coalition will be an ever more potent voice. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mayor, City Council, O Father of all, as we continue to remember September 11th, 2001, we pray for those who courageously laid down their lives for the cause of freedom. Grant them the peace and let perpetual light shine upon them. May the example of their sacrifice inspire in us the selfless love of your Son, our Lord Jesus Christ. Grant that through his passion, death, and resurrection, that they may share the joy of your heavenly kingdom. Bless the families of our fallen military, our firefighters, and our police officers, and all the civilians that came to help and fulfill with their homes and their lives with your strength and peace. We pray this through Christ our Lord. Amen. Thank you.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to address the council at this time?
Patty Welsh, Arroyo Grande. Staff recently suggested that the council consider raising the water rates by 10%. I believe it was Mr. Guthrie and Mr.
Could I just have you put the mic up right there? Thank you.
I believe it was Mr. Guthrie and Mr. Brown who said, let's raise it by 11%. So that 1% could go for cash for grass. As I understand, the cash for grass program has been eliminated. So I'd like to ask that you now remove that 1% increase on our water rates to truly reward the citizens of Arroyo Grande who are conserving water. I'd also like to mention that we had a special website or place that residents could go for the Halcyon-Briscoe interchange so that they could give their concerns or what have you on that website. I hear a lot of people talking about the water, but residents don't feel like their input is being heard. It would be really nice if the city would set up something like that so that citizens can have some say-so, or do a workshop so we can all get together and brainstorm and see about setting up some triggers so that if we have to go to stage two, we have implemented something that we're cutting back so it isn't such a jarring impact to go from where we are to 50 gallons per person per day. Thank you.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to address the council at this time? Please. Mr. Shira.
Good evening. Frank Shiro, 206 Miller Way, partner at Rooster Creek Tavern and Mason Bar and Kitchen. I'd like to speak to you tonight about our current water situation and the much-discussed building moratorium. In our recent candidate forum held right here, when asked what are the three biggest issues facing AG this election, Mr. Mayor, you said it best. Number one is water, number two is water, and number three is water. During the discussion of how much water would be saved from a building moratorium, there have been many conflicting numbers tossed around from staff's 1.6% to the mayor's 10%. So I did some digging on my own. I asked the building department for the number of single-family permits issued for 2015 and 2016 year-to-date. I very quickly received the answer of 18 homes in 2015 and 12 homes year-to-date 2016. Staff's report states that there are approximately 6,000 water connections. 18 single-family homes represents, in my numbers, 0.3%. A building moratorium of single-family homes is not only not a solution to our city's water crisis, it doesn't even dent it, primarily because we haven't been building many homes. I'm hoping to see in this council and in the next council a comprehensive plan that attacks this problem on multiple fronts. An average single-family home uses 400 gallons per day. Industry average for a busy full-service restaurant uses 5,800 gallons per day. And I would hope that the plan focuses on a number of things. Number one, while commercial accounts have been asked to save, some cities like Pismo Beach have mandated specific measures for restaurants specifically. Waterless urinals and low-flow faucets are only a couple. Owning a number of restaurants, I personally know that of the 5,800 gallons, a majority goes to dishwashing. We should be requiring low water Energy Star dishwashers and low flow dishwashers of 1.6 gallons per minute or less. There's 125 restaurants, according to Yelp, in our city, and I don't know how many gas stations, but a waterless urinal is a great way to go. We've already had to install one at Shell Beach, and it's already saved us quite a bit of water. Number two, on the residential front, we should immediately reinstate all of the incentive programs that have been rescinded, cash for grass, et cetera. Number three, water neutral or water negative development. Los Osos decided 8 years ago that instead of denying a citizen the right to develop their land, they would require the owner or developer to save through retrofits within the city twice as much water as their home, restaurant, or project would use before they were issued a building permit. Finally, the plan's goal it is to use less water with a few more people that we have room for. Let's work on a real solution that prevents us from running out of our own most precious resource and preserve the jobs and the economic health that we currently have. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Yes, sir.
Good evening. My name is Joe Farino. I live on North Elm Street. First, I'd like to thank you for your service, and I appreciate it greatly. I'm bringing a problem that probably is a county decision, but since I'm a city resident and taxpayer and you're my elected officials, you know how things work, so I come to you. Recently, I was one of the 51,000 people that received that little plastic bucket And, you know, I try to be a good citizen, and I try to look out for our world, and I'm trying to use that along with all the other recycling that we do. But quite frankly, that bucket doesn't work for me. It's smelly. It draws flies. You can't leave it outside because of wild animals and dogs. It has to be indoors. I take it out. I put it in my yard waste container. Now my yard waste container smells bad and draws flies. If there was a biodegradable bag, it would make things so much nicer. Now, I looked at the website. The website says, oh, put in baking soda, do this, do that. And the garbage would be, your food scraps would be in your garbage anyway, so it's not a problem. Well, when it's in my garbage, it's in a bag and it's sealed up and it isn't a problem. But now there's no bag. Now, I've heard that maybe this new recycling facility that we're getting, or the old one or whatever, doesn't like bags. I don't know how many thousand qualified engineers we're turning out at Cal Poly. Somebody's got to be able to figure out a way that the bags are not a problem. And biodegradable is the way to go. I really haven't heard anybody speak highly of this little program. And I have heard some people speak quite negatively. I've been making an effort, but quite likely my patience has just about run its course. I'm sure it costs money to turn out those buckets, but possibly you can reach out to your colleagues and other leaders and maybe see if they can't do something a little better. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your comment.
I just wanted to mention there's a meeting tomorrow at 1:30 in San Luis Obispo from Waste Management. You might want to go because I think there's probably other people that have the same concern that you do. And I'll raise the issue if you don't make it, but it might come better from you than from me.
Where is it at?
It's in the supervisor's chambers at 1:30 tomorrow.
Would anyone else like to address the council at this time? Okay, hearing none.
She's got
I'm sorry.
Really, there's a line. Shirley Gibson, Halcyon. I had two things to bring up tonight. One is about making Halcyon Road safer between the Freeway 101 and Highway 1. There's going to be a informational meeting tomorrow from 5:30 to 8 o'clock at Margaret Harlow School, and it's just a community conversation on, you know, whatever issues you have, whether it's speeding or passing or accidents, whatever is happening on Halcyon Road. And I think one of the things I worry most about is Margaret Harlow School and the kids having to cross at the light, even with a guardian there. It's a dangerous spot. And there will be another meeting on Thursday night. So Wednesday, Thursday night, 5:30 to 8, Margaret Harlow School. And then the second point I wanted to talk about was local history. In 1914, the Herald Recorder printed a letter to the editor about a woman that rode her horse down Branch Street. She parked her horse at the commercial company to do her shopping. The commercial company was JJ's for a long time, and now it's the Mason Bar. And the commercial had a horse rail until about the early 1920s. They had it for a long time. So the writer thought that the woman should be arrested if she rode into town again wearing those newfangled bloomers in public. So I guess we could all wish that bloomers were coming back. Thank you.
Thank you, Shirley. And again, that the meeting on Halcyon is both tomorrow night and Thursday night at Margaret Harlow School, and it's 5:30 to 8 p.m. Would anyone else like to address the council at this time? Okay, hearing none, we'll move on to item number 8, the interim city manager report. Mr. McFall.
It's members of Mr. Mayor, members of council. Other than just saying that despite the circumstances, I'm happy to be back again, and the welcome from all of you and staff has been tremendous, and I appreciate the opportunity. I want to just be able to communicate you that to you that of what you know, you have an excellent staff. They're doing a tremendous job, and looking forward to working on some of the projects that council has set priorities on and accomplishing. That's all I have on my report.
Okay, thank you very much. Questions, comments?
Nope.
Okay, moving on then to item 9, the consent agenda. Does anyone have any items they'd like to consider separately?
No, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Are there any public comments on the consent agenda items? Those are items 9A through 9F. Any comment on those items? Okay, hearing no comment on the consent agenda items, do we have a motion? Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we approve the consent agenda as presented. May we have a roll call, please?
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Barnidge?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Harmon?
Yes.
And Mayor Hill?
Yes. Item passes unanimously. Moving then to item 10, public hearings. Item 10A, I would ask the city clerk to please introduce the item.
Item 10A is consideration of user fee study and resolution updating operating fees set forth in the master fee schedule and adding new fees related to pickleball programs, animal impound services, and licensing of medical marijuana delivery services.
Okay. And staff report.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of council. I'm just going to make a few introductory comments before turning it over to the consultant who is going to make the majority of the presentation. First, as is the practice of council and staff, we received a number of questions from staff for clarification purposes before this evening on this item, and I wanted to thank council for providing the questions. This is actually a complex subject, and there's many different ways it can be presented, and you know, your observations and comments and questions were very helpful in making, I think, what would be a very valuable presentation this evening. As the council is aware, the government code currently requires that when a municipal agency sets fees for defined types of services, that the fees have to be backed up by a study that shows that the fees being collected don't exceed the reasonable cost of that service being provided. And of course, there's many very legitimate and ethical reasons of why that government code is in place. Therefore, it means that agencies periodically have to do a very comprehensive fee study to, in fact, determine what are the costs of providing those services. Are they reasonable costs? What fees, therefore, can be generated as a result of the costs that have been identified. There are some policy issues that the council is going to be asked to deal with this evening in setting that. It is not mandatory the city, of course, charge fees, but if they do, they have to have completed a study such as this. Cost recovery and some portion of cost recovery is, of course, the bottom line effort behind the establishment or doing the study and the establishment of the fees. And that's probably one of the primary council policy issues that you will determine in the course of this, of what is the proper fee level, literally, in essence, what is the amount of the full cost that should be charged for providing a service, which ranges all the way from full cost recovery, relatively typical on development-related fees, to something less than that, typically in recreation fees, police fees, other fees. So, council, that's part of the report this evening that council would be considering. There's three factors that you're going to hear about this evening that can affect the total revenue that's generated. One, of course, is the fees that are established themselves, the fees and as the fees relate to the cost of providing the services. And then the council adopted subsidy to providing that fee. For example, we feel that it's the most appropriate that 100% of that cost be borne by the applicant that's coming in to making the request or incurring the fee. And then lastly, and this is probably the largest variable, is the number of projects that are coming in that that fee is being applied to. If there are very few projects coming in, the amount of revenue generated would be less. In a year such as what we're actually experiencing right now, where there's a significant project load, that amount might go up or would be expected to go up. The reason for saying that is that these kinds of fees and the predictions that come out from them are not an exact science. There's lots of variables to it, but the fee study has been done applies all of the best practices and the industry accepted practices of how you go about establishing a fee schedule such as is being considered or presented to council this evening. With that being said, I'd like to turn it over to Chad Wolford. He is the consultant that has working on this one. He was also the consultant that did Rio Grande's last study. Be supported, of course, by Debbie Malicote, Administrative Services Director, who managed the process. Then we also have other department heads in the audience who are affected by this or who manage the actual projects that the fees are applied to.
Well, thank you. I'm very pleased to be here tonight. Thank you very much for having me. I'm pleased for a couple reasons. One is I'm excited to share with you the results of the study. There's a lot of work that's gone into it. There's some great information here. I'm also pleased, and I think I speak for all of the city staff that were involved with the study, sort of pleased that it's done. They've spent a lot of time and a lot of effort on it, and to their credit, they were fantastic in the process. So I want to give some kudos to the staff for that before I get into anything here. I have a presentation for you tonight that is a little bit of information, a little bit of workshop, and although some or maybe all of you have a very good understanding of user fees and the processes and the concepts, we know we have public here as well, so some of it's intended to help educate them and inform them as well. So as I go through the presentation, there will be a number of slides. Some of them I will sort of skip. I'll reference them and skip. They're there for future information if you wish. I can delve into them if you want. But there's a lot of information. Some of it's not necessary to go into great detail, and you'll see as I go through it. My goals today are, one, to help everyone understand the background of the study, the concepts, the methodologies. By doing that and by explaining what we went through, I'm hoping it builds great confidence in the results. I'm hoping we come through this with everybody accepting them as real, accepting them as valid, and moving forward with decisions on that basis. I'm going to go through and discuss the results themselves, of course, answer any questions, and then we're going to talk about, Debbie's going to go through some of the concepts and the recommendations from staff for your consideration. One of the slides I'll skip is talking about me, other than to say that I've been involved with government costs and government operations for over 30 years, and I was the one who did the city's fee study back in 2007, so there's sort of a repeat performance here. This is what I do. I focus on, I specialize in cost studies. That's what my practice is dedicated to. The objectives of the study, we think of a fee study or a cost study sometimes as simply a way to raise revenue, and it's not. It can be that, and that is one of the outcomes of this potentially, depending on council action, but really there's a lot of information that comes through the process to staff and ultimately to you. One is to establish the fee information, what are the costs, the full cost of service, so you can make a decision on that basis. Understanding what the subsidies may be, what potential revenues are. One of the things we tried to do in the organization of the study, the basic structure of the study, was to make some changes if we needed to fix problems in your current fee structures, whether things were unfair or unbalanced or difficult to administer or not good customer service. We tried to identify opportunities to improve things, not just the fee levels, but the structures and the administration of the fee as well. So if we could ever simplify or enhance them in some way to help staff and or help the customers, that was one of our objectives throughout the study. There's a series of tasks that we went through. One of them, the first one really, well, the main purpose, of course, is to calculate the costs. One of the things important to know about a study like this is it's not just a fee study, it's a cost study for the departments involved. So we looked at fee and non-fee categories so that anytime we were spreading overhead or administrative costs or something like that, it wasn't all concentrated on fee-related activities, but it was spread in a fair and appropriate manner throughout everything. The one thing that I want to mention at the bottom of this is that this wasn't a management study, it wasn't an operational study. We didn't look at whether staff was efficient, effective, et cetera. That wasn't the scope of the study. However, as a management consultant also, if I had seen something like that, if I had seen major inefficiencies, major operational problems, Debbie would probably have a proposal in her hands right now for me to come back and look at that. She does not, so I didn't see anything like that. So that did, not to say that there isn't anything, but there was nothing glaring or obvious as I went through and evaluated the departments. One thing that's very important when we talk about this is to really come to a clear definition of what is a user fee. Very often folks will confuse or conflate fees and taxes, and they're two different things. And what happens with a fee, what we're trying to do is we're trying to recover the cost for a service that the city provides for which someone receives some kind of private benefit. Whether that's a homeowner that's receiving beneficial plan checks or inspections of their project, or a developer who's going to be making a profit off of it, it's someone receiving some kind of private benefit. That's what fees are, and that's what we're focusing on in this study. Fees typically are something where it's a discretionary service, where the person comes in and requests a service, or something that they're requesting requires the service. Not everybody says, I want you to plan, check, or inspect, but if they're going to develop, that's part of what they have to have done. So it is a discretionary activity. If a user fee, this is a very critical point here, but if a user fee does not cover the cost of the service, something does, and it's general fund. So, and general fund is essentially taxes. So if user fees don't cover it, taxes cover it. So if someone is receiving a private benefit and they're not paying the full cost, taxpayers in general are covering the balance of that full cost. Different programs have different levels of cost recovery, and going and saying that a fee or a fee activity is subsidized is not necessarily a criticism or condemnation of it. There's great public policy reasons, perhaps, and other reasons why you might want to subsidize something, and there's very traditional activities that are subsidized, even though there might be a personal benefit from it. And I gave some examples up here in this graphic. Something like a building permit or some recreational programs, usually we think of an adult softball or something like that, where we say those folks really should be paying the full boat. But we get into some where there's some public benefit, youth programs, for example, we may want to subsidize it. Even though it costs the city a little bit of money to do that, we might have them those programs subsidized because we want youth engaged in activities and off the streets or what have you. Long-range planning is something where, yeah, it's benefiting development, but it's also benefiting the livability of the city, what the city looks like, what it feels like. So in some cases, that's a very good thing to subsidize. And then we look at something like police patrol, where, you know, yeah, if a police officer is responding or helping you when you're in some sort of danger, that's a personal benefit, but we don't charge individuals for something like that. We see that as something that really benefits the community as a whole, so we subsidize that as a whole. So there's kind of this long continuum of what gets subsidized and what doesn't, and fortunately for me, it's the council's difficult position to try and figure out where that really should lay. One of the things that we really try to think about when we do this study is a series of concepts when we're looking at fees. This is not only when we're designing the structures of the fees, but also when I talk and advise staff about what might be some good recommended fees or what might be some things to think about. One of them is that user fees should be based on cost of services. Essentially, the state code requires that you somehow have a basis for your fees in cost somewhere, and that's the whole purpose of doing a study like this. That makes sure the fees aren't arbitrary, but also it allows us to identify what the subsidies are so they're not unintentionally subsidized or unintentionally profitable. If you choose to make a decision in one of those, at least you have the basis on which to make that decision. Unfairly subsidized, meaning that maybe one group or one fee payer doesn't subsidize another, there's propositions in state law, et cetera, that tries to prevent that. And so we keep that in mind when we're developing these fees and the activities. And in the state code, there's a requirement that fees can be no greater than the estimated reasonable cost for the service for which the fee was charged. That's our basic standard. So we always want to make sure that we're looking at reasonableness. There's some estimation that may be going on that goes on here, and I'll talk a little bit about that when we get into the methodology itself. But we always want to make sure that it's reasonable. And there's a series of quality control measures, not that I'll go into all of them here, but there's a series of quality control measures that we have in place in the models, the analytical models, in our discussions, in the reviews, in the back and forth iterations to make sure they're reasonable. Okay. I mentioned before that we want to make sure that the fees are fair and equitable. That's one of our basic principles. Make sure that they're consistent with city goals and objectives, obviously compliant with state law. And the other one is dynamic, to make sure that should things change, should there be anomalies in the requests and services that come in, service requests that come into you, that you have a fee structure that can handle that. So we built in some fees, essentially hourly rates and things like that, that allow when different circumstances arise that you can handle those circumstances without too much difficulty or having to come back to council on each individual project type thing. A great question that comes up very often is, why are fees necessary? This is very often a public question. Someone says, I pay my taxes, why should I also have to pay fees? And it comes back to, first and foremost, the idea that if you're receiving a private benefit, why should all other taxpayers subsidize your private benefit? That's the first basic question. But essentially, there was a time when, going way back, this is pre-Prop 13, let's say, when there may have been enough taxes, that fees weren't really a priority because cities and counties, et cetera, could raise taxes to cover all their revenue. It wasn't an issue. Now that's not the case. We all know that. There's restrictions from the propositions. There's restrictions from state takeaways of property taxes, et cetera, that sort of leave local government with not too many options for raising revenue to cover the cost of services. And the service demands are always there. There's always development. There's always these kind of activities that require services, and you need a way to fund those. And the general fund isn't always there. There's competing demands for that, public safety demands, et cetera. So there needs to be a way to tie the service to the cost to the fee, and that's what the fee study and the fees are for, to try and recover the cost for individual activities so that common taxpayers don't have to fund all these private activities and private benefits. Some of the recent trends, and recent I'll say over the past 5 or 10 years, there's not a lot of radical changes, of course, that occur in government as a whole, but certainly not in the fee areas. But some of the trends that I've been seeing over the last decade or so has been that cities have really tried more and more to recover their costs in fees. And not just by doing fee studies and such, but by increasing their recovery rates or decreasing their subsidy rates. There's a time, perhaps, when planning fees were grossly subsidized, and very often by building fees, that's been turned around. Now that there's a much greater emphasis on individual areas, individual programs, planning, building, engineering, et cetera, recovering their own costs within their own programs, very often setting up in enterprise funds, things like that, to consider them or to organize them as if they were their own business to recover their own costs internally. One of the trends that we're seeing that you were really at the forefront of was moving to cost-based fees for building. Back in 2007, you converted from a methodology called valuation-based, which took the value of a property and set the fees on that basis. We realized a while ago that there's no nexus between the valuation and the cost of inspecting and plan checking it, so we set up cost-based building fees. We did that again this time, just pointing out that you were vanguards in that doing that. I mentioned before that there was a time when, say, building offset planning, and that's been turned around, where planning is trying to recover its own, building's trying to recover its own. One of the things, though, that we're seeing in building and planning both is there's a consideration or some thinking about, is there a public benefit to individual building fees and individual planning fees? What is that public benefit? What percentage of the fees, therefore, should be funded through subsidies as opposed to individual fee payers? Generally what folks are saying, when I say folks, I mean other cities that I've been working with, is that there doesn't tend to be a lot in the building side. So building fees tend to be closer to 100%, if not at 100% cost recoverable. But there sometimes is a thought that maybe planning fees should be subsidized slightly because there's a benefit to the neighbors and the community, that sort of thing, for some planning fees. We'll go through the methodology just a little bit here. After this one, I'm going to skip the next slide, I think, because it's more details than we want to go through here. But essentially what we do is a unit cost buildup. We identify each individual fee, and we try and build the cost for that individual fee. It's based upon the organization that you have now and the business practices that you have now so that the fees are really matching what you're doing. The fees are directly related to staff effort. We use the time for staff to complete activities to build these fees. So it's directly related to the staff effort and really nothing else. Because staff effort is going to vary on size and complexity of projects, the staff effort varies in that, so the fees are going to vary on that. So we really try to create this nexus between how long and how hard is it for staff to perform these services, and the fees are set on that basis. When I say fee set, I mean the results that we've calculated. Obviously, fee setting is your purview. I'm sort of using fee setting interchangeably with the results that we came up with. These activities and the services and the costs that we come up are not based on any kind of tax concepts. And what I mean by tax concept, sort of the revenue goal that we identify, we need $1 million to cover whatever costs in general, so let's make sure we raise all the fees to bring in another $1 million. That sort of gross backing into it level, that's not what we did. We did a very intricate, detailed approach, and I'll show you that a little bit in just a moment. As I mentioned, we use staff time to complete the activities and services. We spread direct and indirect costs, not only of the individual positions that are working on those activities, but support, management, supervisory positions as well. We spread overhead and line item costs, pencils, paper, electricity, all that goes in. And we establish these billable hourly rates so that we know how much does it cost for an individual employee to spend an hour on a project. We build all that up, and then once we've established all those pieces together, we've identified what the full cost of the service is. That's what we call the potential fee. It's the starting point for decision making. And really, when we talk about the results, by the way, this is some of the detail I mentioned, that it's the details of the methodology steps. It's in there for future reference, but I don't want to go through it now. I mentioned also that all the legitimate costs that can possibly go in, that's related to the operation, that goes in. It includes all of these activities. And we spend a lot of time going through line item budgets to make sure that individual line items are either included or excluded from the analysis, depending on whether they're relevant or not. If they're not involved with the activities we're talking about, we take it out of the fees. So there are excluded activities, excluded services, excluded expenditure items as well. So the general methodology is we identify the cost of the position, the total cost of the position, salaries, benefits, et cetera, divided by billable hours. We come up with a cost per hour. We take that cost per hour and we multiply that by the time to complete a task. That gives us the cost of service. Very simple in concept. This is what you would do if you're trying to build the cost of a service in any private enterprise, consulting firms, attorneys, dentists, plumbers. Everybody's doing it pretty much just like this. The thing to keep in mind is that the cost of the position is full cost. I've showed you the full cost before. And I mentioned before also, I want to reiterate it, that the indirect costs were spread not only to the fee activities, but to the non-fee activities as well, so that there was a very fair, very reasonable distribution of costs. This is what it looks like visually. What we did, and this is a hypothetical fee number one. Okay, if you look down the left-hand side, you'll see fee number one, intake, document, review, inspection, filing. These are, say, the activities that make up the service involved with fee number one. And what we'll do is we'll take the time to complete the intake, the time to complete the documentation, etc., multiply it by the staff hourly rate to come up with a cost of the staff time. Then below on the other costs, that's where we would put in the support costs and service supplies, etc. In this scenario, we've come up with a total cost of $500 for one unit of fee number one. Now, what we did is, this analysis, we did it for every single fee, hundreds and hundreds of fee, and every single position involved with every single fee. So I mentioned at the very beginning of my presentation that staff spent a lot of time, a lot of effort, and they're probably very glad that it's done. It's because they did this on every single fee for every single position involved. And it was hundreds, if not thousands, of data points that they had to go through, prepare, review, go back and forth on. So under this scenario, we've got a total cost of $500. That would be the unit cost. If the current fee is $300, there's a subsidy of $200 presently. We did that analysis on every single fee, and that's what you'll see in the results that were attached to the report. The worksheets show these kind of individual unit subsidies. What we also did is, if there was a volume of activity, in this hypothetical case, there's 10 fees a year, we can see that the total cost for each is $500, but if you multiply by 10, the total cost annually is $5,000. If the subsidy is $200 each, the subsidy is $2,000 a year. So what we see in the final results also is a sort of a conglomeration of all of those fees listed. So when we say planning has $700,000 of cost and X dollars of revenue and a subsidy of Y dollars, this is the process we went through on an individual fee-by-fee basis and then built it up into those revenue figures. So the visual example here is fee number 1, 2, 3, 4 all adds up, nets out to a $3,300 subsidy a year. And so that's the funding gap, or if you want to think of it as potential new revenue, if you were to set all fees at 100% full cost. So one of the questions that I get regularly is, why are we using time estimates? Why didn't we do a time and motion study to calculate these fees? Well, the first reason is it's not required, first and foremost. The state code requires estimated reasonable. So as long as they're reasonable, you can use estimated. And if we get close and we spend a lot of time making sure it's reasonable and we make a lot of efforts to ensure that the estimates are good, valid estimates, then we're okay. The one thing that is important, if you've ever been involved in a time and motion study, they take a very long time, they're very expensive, and you may not come out with any better results than if you started with estimates in the way that we do this. Mainly because we're talking about development activity primarily here. And not every project type and every project size happens every year. So even if we did a one-year time study, you wouldn't get all the projects in there. Plus, you'd have to go at least a year to get different seasons and different activities, and we've got a different development cycle that's going on in the community. It may not really provide a realistic view of what the times are. So you'd have to do it multiple years. You'd have to have staff involved doing a lot of work, tracking time. And really, it's a very onerous process that, in my experience, doesn't come up with really great information unless it's a very, very expensive, well-monitored study, which is way out of the realm of what really is necessary for municipal government fees. And the data isn't always that valid because people end up, you know, end of the week trying to catch up with their time estimates, et cetera. So really, the time estimates is the way to go, because we go to the key staff, we go to the experienced staff, and we say, of these project types, in your experience, in this city, how long does it take to do these things? And we go back and forth, and I use my experience from other jobs and this sort of thing, and we sort of come down to what, ultimately, we get to a very comfortable time estimate for a typical project in this community. Those are all the data from that's measured and balanced so that we sort of have cross-checks and everything in our quality processes. But ultimately, time estimates, they're the industry standard everywhere we go in this, but they're also the best way to go in this. They actually result in the greatest, most accurate data that we could probably get. I mentioned the quality control processes. I could spend days talking about that. Nobody wants that, so I'll move on. Just suffice it to say that there are a number of steps that we go through, and these studies take months to complete because of these quality steps. We go back and forth and back and forth and keep checking. So let me go into the results themselves. I'll pause and take a breath for just a moment if there are any questions on this, these methodology issues. If not, I'll move on.
You mentioned that a lot of this is done and based on council priorities. I'm concerned about how you came up with what the council priorities might be.
Actually, the study itself is done in a totally objective fashion with no consideration of council priorities. It's after the results are done. It's when council priorities come in. It was the mention of council priorities is in discussions of what the staff might bring forward, that they should keep in mind what past council priorities have been in terms of if they'd been communicated in terms of fees to the staff. So it had nothing to do, apologize for the miscommunication, has nothing to do with the actual analysis. That was totally objective. It simply has to do with the advice of what do you do with it now. When you go and bring forward recommendations, you should keep in mind council priorities.
I guess what I'm trying to come up with is you made a recommendation on what we should do, obviously based on your study. How did you come up to the conclusion that that was what we as a council would want?
Actually, if I could clarify, it is not his recommendation. They are staff's recommendations. So although he did the independent analysis of the cost and what is required to the cost of the service, it is actually staff's recommendations to the council of what we should now do with that data.
Great. Thank you for that clarification. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, so what we have here is a table of the ultimate results. And the first thing I'd like to point out is these are simply the cost results for the fee-related activity. In planning, building, engineering, and police, there are, of course, a number of non-fee-related activities, things for which there is no specific customer. Maybe the city is the customer. So we're really just focusing here on fee-related activities. I mention that only because if you were to look at, say, the planning budget, it's greater than 659,000, buildings greater than 434, et cetera. And what we're seeing here is the column on the left, the full cost, that's the total cost of all fee-related services in the study. The next column, projected revenue, is at the same level of activity, the same volume of services, what would the current fees bring in? And in the case of planning, the current fees would bring in $196,000 compared to $659,000 in cost. So there's a current annual subsidy in planning of $463,000. Planning is recovering only 30% of its fee-related activities. Building, same approach, $87,000 current funding gap or subsidy. They're actually recovering 80% of their costs. Engineering is recovering 82% of their costs. Police are recovering 34% of their fee-related costs. Overall, in the activities that we're looking at in the study, there's a $723,000 deficit, subsidy, funding gap, however you want to term it, and the city as a whole is recovering 56% of its cost in those fees. So a more visual way to look at it here is that the blue is the current fee recovery. The total line, or the total bar, is the overall cost of the service. Just gives you another way to look at it. As I mentioned, the overall subsidy is about $723,000. Gives you a cost recovery rate of 56%. The full cost is really what we're talking about, is the maximum potential fee revenues here. Should you decide to raise all fees to 100% full cost, you would achieve, assuming a volume of activity is the same year after year, you would receive another $723,000 annually in city revenues. Obviously, that's the maximum or the most optimistic view of it. If you were to subsidize, make individual subsidy decisions, follow staff recommendations, et cetera, there would be less than that, but that's the maximum amount. Continuing with the very original theme is that if you don't increase fees or somehow reduce operating costs or cut service levels or something like that in those fee levels, the general fund's going to continue to subsidy at that level. Now, I mentioned before we're talking about the results in the tables, and these are the tables that I'm referring to are the attachments to the text report that was submitted. They're a little more detailed than what you're seeing here, but you'll be able to see the same column headings, et cetera, to show you what's there. And the revenues that we're talking about, the 723,000 potential revenues, is really going to be mitigated perhaps by your fee-setting decisions if activities levels decline instead of increase or remain the same. If some activities go up and others go down, that change in mix might change it. These are a few of the caveats I throw out to mention that. I wouldn't hang your hat on $723,000. I wouldn't bank that yet. It's really just the maximum potential. And you'll see when the staff recommendations are presented a little bit later, the actual anticipated revenue is significantly less than that. The worksheets that are attached to the report. The results themselves look like this. And here's just some individual examples to help understand how to read it. We show our current fee, our current deposit. Almost all of these are going to be fees and not deposits. Then it's compared next to it, the full cost. Then it shows the subsidy, then the cost recovery rate. You'll see this repeated over and over for planning, building, engineering, and police in the reports. And this shows exactly what it looks like. This is the fees, these are the calculated costs, the current fee, and the comparison between them. So let's talk about planning for a little bit here. I mentioned in the summary they have a fairly large subsidy and fairly low recovery rate. 96% of all their fees are under recovering. The other 4% are either right at, or there might be some that are slightly over. 100% of the staff rates are less than full cost. Those are the hourly rates calculated. The current rates are, all of them are less than their full cost. And the average staff rates are only 30% of full cost. So for any projects that are based upon a deposit and actual time and materials charged by staff, you're only recovering 30% of the cost there. And in the fee study that we did, almost all of the service costs that we look at are recoverable if the city and the council decide to recover for them. In building, we had an 80% cost recovery. The 95% of the current rates are under recovering full cost. And when I'm talking about 95%, I'm talking about a tally. So if there's 100 fees, 95 of them are under recovering. Again, the 5% left over are either right at full cost recovery or maybe slightly over cost recovery. Again, 100% of staff rates are less than full cost. Average staff rates are only 68% of full cost. And again, most building costs are recoverable. There's very, very few building fees that are commonly subsidized. In engineering, we have the same picture. The count's a little less here, but 75% of current fees under recover full cost. Again, 100% of staff rates are less than full cost, and staff rates are only 50% of full cost. Again, with engineering here, we're not talking about CIP and that sort of thing. We're talking about development engineering. Most service costs are recoverable if the city desires to do so. Police. We don't think of very many fees in police, and we don't think of police as a fee organization, but they do. They have a series of fees. 78% of their fees under recover full cost. 100% of their rates are less full cost. I guess I should have just said ditto here. But the average staff rates here are only 39% of full cost. In the services that we're looking at, almost all of them are recoverable if desired. There are some police service costs that are commonly subsidized, either because it's required by state law or the city likes to do it. Fingerprinting is a good example of that. Very often that's subsidized below cost. Fix-it tickets, things like that as well, very often subsidized below cost. Although actually I'm not sure that you do fix-it tickets here. But general findings are, as we've just gone through, every department has a significant fee study. There are a few fees that have a slight surplus, but almost all of them are subsidized. 93% of the fees that we looked at by tally are subsidized. And the opportunity here for the city to increase fees or to increase revenues or to increase cost recovery, it would be to increase fees towards full cost as opposed to having a large series of new fees for services that you don't perform. There are some new fees. Those will be addressed in a little bit. But really, the opportunities for greater cost recovery are about raising current fees. Some of the other general findings, this is more about the study itself. The billable hours, available hours or billable hours, sometimes known as productive hours, were used in the calculation of the hourly rates. They're very consistent with other studies. I've done hundreds of these studies, and it's very consistent with those. All current staff hourly rates are less than the full cost calculated in the study. All current staff hourly rates are lower than those from all other city cost studies that I perform, the ones that I looked back into. And staff hourly rates calculated in the study are within the normal range of other cost studies that I've performed. So nothing here in Oro Grande is anomalous. Nothing here was strange. There's nothing... Although your subsidies look very high, you'll see individual fees may look very high, you may see hourly rates that look high compared to what you have now. But in comparison to other studies, comparison to other cities that I've looked at, they are not. They're within those normal ranges. One of the things that I want to mention.
Can we pause for
Excuse me.
One question. When you had the other one that showed sort of the departmental hourly or the departmental subsidies, was that in line? Was that overall departmental and also in line with other cities? I understand when you're saying here the staff time that the hourly rates are in line, but is the is sort of the overall subsidy in line with other cities?
I would say that the subsidies in city to city vary wildly. On a number of factors, whether they have had a policy of cost recovery in the past, whether they've had a study in the past few years, if they raise things by CPI versus other factors over the years. So I can't really answer your question definitively because I've seen some very low, some very high. I would say that they fit. It doesn't look strange to me. They're probably, your subsidies are in the high range, meaning your recovery is on the low range in planning for sure. Police for sure. Building you're doing pretty good compared to others. Engineering probably middle of the pack. So it kind of varies here.
Okay, so that 30% in planning is at least on the low end, if not the very lowest end.
Yeah, 30% on planning is what I used to see on recovery when you include the non-fee activities in there. You know, planning departments, that was kind of a standard that they only recover 30% of their cost. If you look at them as a whole, but planning departments that I studied in the past that were trying to charge and recover the cost in just the fee areas were at 60% before studies. Okay. So it's planning's very low compared to others.
And you hinted at a second question that I was actually going to ask later, but maybe I'll ask it here. And that is, so looking back in 2007, do you know where we started? I mean, you know, we do this by CPI. So in 2007, were we at a 56%, if I remember right, 56% subsidy? And is it something that you lose over time generally?
Yeah, well, first of all, I unfortunately didn't look at that to kind of refresh my memory on what it was back then. But the factors that may come into play here are if the city did not set fees at 100% cost recovery in 2007, obviously you're starting a little bit behind. I know that some of the fees have been increased over the years by CPI, but if you look at CPI over the past 9 years, it certainly has not kept track. I mean, 2009, I think, was negative, as a matter of fact. CPI has not kept track with health care, has not kept track with retirement costs, has not kept track with energy. So CPI has been a way to go, and it's been a sort of a easy way to and a starting point, but it has not kept track with real inflation in municipal government. So you can get lose track really quickly.
So it's been a legal way, but not an accurate way.
It's been
a legal way, but not an accurate way to track it.
Yeah, it's a starting point, I would say. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
And by the way, it's a very common way. It's a very common way.
Okay. So are there other ways?
Yeah, there are. There's
a study?
Using labor costs, using your own real budget costs, using if you have a localized inflation factor that takes into account what the city's really doing. Those kinds of things are much better. But labor, I think probably even just focusing on labor as a starting point is a very good place to go because probably 70, 80, even 90% of your costs and fees is probably labor. So it's the majority of it.
All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, in the report itself, there's a section there that discusses different alternatives for that. If you wanted to see more detail, there's some mention of that. So it's sort of a little bit of a segue there, talking about where, you know, how did we get here from 2007? And the reminder is of the methodology that we had the cost of the position divided by billable hours, the hours, you know, give us our hourly rate, and the hourly rate is multiplied by the time estimates. So just looking here, there's three different factors that could affect the cost of the services. But if you look at each of those individual factors, there's many, many, many factors that can go into each of those. There's probably 30 different factors, maybe more, that can go into how you end up with a cost of service. Just the cost of position, salaries, benefits, the service supply costs, retirement, healthcare, you know, I mentioned those are elements of benefits, any of those changes is going to change. The billable hours, if there's more or less training, if there's more or less vacation granted, if there's more holidays in the year, all of those factor into the billable hours. The time estimates, if you have, if in the interim since 2007, there are some new code requirements that now a building department, for example, has to build into their plan checking and inspection, it now takes more time. If there's more efficiencies that they found, it takes less time. So there's a lot of different factors that go in. And so you may see that a number of activities that even if you set everything at full cost in 2007, it could be completely out of whack now for those for 30 different reasons. And there's a slide that mentions some of those. I'm not going to go through all of them, but you can check those out at a later time if you wish. That concludes my portion of the presentation. If there are any questions now or at the end, I'm glad to answer them as we go along.
I don't have any more at this point.
None for me at this point.
Any others?
Well, I have one, but I can wait. I don't know. What's the next presentation? I'm not sure if it should
We're going to move forward to what the recommendations are, that given this information that we received from the study, how then do we move forward with setting the fees and implementing the recommendations?
Okay, I'll go ahead and wait then for my questions. Thanks.
My only question is the four, I'll call them cost centers, planning, building, engineering, and police. Was that the full range of city services that was studied?
That is the range of services that was in our RFP that we identified as being part of this study.
Okay, thank you.
So moving on with then, as I mentioned, now that we have this information about the cost of the services, what do we do with that information? And again, as Chad mentioned, user fees are charged when there is a private benefit for services provided by the city. And anything we don't collect from the user or the person that receives that private benefit gets subsidized through the general taxes that the city collects. So a lot of the things that staff considered in crafting the recommendations that are in front of you tonight, when you look at setting fees, we looked at many, many factors. Some of them having to do with previous council direction, cost recovery policies that we, you know, we kind of went back to the 2007 study. We said, where were we on this last time? Oh, we were at 50% cost recovery. Okay, what happens to this fee if we, again, place it at a 50% cost recovery rate? Is there some level of constituency that may warrant us setting this at something less than full cost recovery? Perhaps it's, you know, youth focused, or it affects a particular segment of the population that maybe we're trying to target for any number of reasons, really. But it could be it could also be based on a comparison of what does this do to our fees relative to our friends and neighbors in neighboring cities. If we're looking at the possibility of someone, you know, coming into our city and developing a business, and they have the opportunity to develop in Arroyo Grande or Grover Beach or Pismo Beach, obviously one of their considerations in their mind is how do I make that decision? Well, there's a financial decision here to be made. So is there some market factor that would influence our recommendation on activities that should be subsidized, and then to what degree should they be subsidized? So to what degree do we think that the general public benefits from this service? As Chad mentioned, there's a continuum all the way from, you know, 0 to 100 of how much should the user bear the burden and how much should the general taxpayer bear the burden of the cost. So all of those factors went into the fee recommendations that are in front of you. And again, there just are a number of considerations. And I have to say, this is the third fee study that I've been involved with in my career. And without exception, this has been the most valuable in every department that was part of the study in identifying what are we doing, why are we doing it, how are we doing it, are we finding opportunities for efficiencies, what has changed since 2007. It's been a long time since we've done a fee study. You know, the industry standard says kind of, you know, about every 5 years. Well, we're coming up on almost 10. So one of the things we saw a lot in police services is 10 years ago, they were very much paper-based, and people had to go pull files and look through physical paper. Now they're so much more electronically available that they have found a lot of their time estimates actually reduced from the last study because they're able to do things electronically. So there are some efficiencies gained. It is a significant work effort on the part of the staff, but I have to say it was very well worth it because we discovered a lot of things and they're small things. They're not earth-shattering things, but they're little things that we found along the way that said we can do this a little bit better. We can be a little bit more efficient, or look at how much the world has changed in 10 years, and we are so much more efficient than we were. So a lot of these things went into the recommendations that you see in front of you regarding the fees that we're recommending for you tonight. And again, it was very much about what does our community perceive as important? What are the types of things that we should, as a community, we place high value on, and we feel that those should be subsidized, and to what degree we think that those should be subsidized? So that public benefit played a large role in our conversations about what we should do with these fees. As I mentioned, should we subsidize user fees, and to what degree? What works for our community may not work for other communities. What's important to our community may not be important to other communities. So while we did take into consideration the fees that are being charged in our neighboring jurisdictions, that was just one of many factors in determining, you know, what's right for our community and what should we be looking at as far as fees. Another thing we talked about was phasing. If we have a cost recovery goal, say perhaps our goal is to get to 100% cost recovery in planning. Well, we're only at 55 now, so to get to 100, maybe we have to bite that apple a few bites at a time and not all at once. So is there some consideration for a phased approach to how to implement recommended fees? What are those cost recovery levels that we're looking at? Do we want to say everybody is at a certain percentage? Do we look at it on a fee-by-fee basis? I can tell you we have looked at this on a fee-by-fee basis, and there are some fees that we have recommended at a higher cost recovery level than others. Some are even as low as 10 or 20% because we feel like that's the value our community places on certain types of fees, whereas other ones are recommended to you that are 80 to 100% cost recovery. So another consideration was timing. By state law, anything that affects development-related fees, which most of these are, building and planning in particular, are development-related fees, you have to have 60 days from what would be tonight's public hearing on the fees to the date when those fees could take effect. So timing of when we would want to make the fees go into effect, what kind of updates should we be doing, and again, kind of that timing and phasing, how do we approach achieving cost recovery goals. Customer service, communicating with the public about the fees, and then future updates. In the recommended resolution in front of you, there is a recommendation to update fees on an annual basis. We're recommending the use of a regional CPI index, but we could use really any number of indices or mechanisms to increase those costs. But we do recommend that we have future updates that are small and incremental rather than large increases every few years. So in a nutshell, the recommendations in front of you are to continue a policy of full cost recovery for building and engineering services. When we look back to the previous study, when we look to the goals and the conversations that we've had with the council and the community in the past, full cost recovery for building and engineering services is what we've pursued in the past. We continue to recommend that we do that. Significant subsidies in police services. Again, this is consistent with prior approach. There are a number of police services for which we could charge a fee. I know if the chief were here, he would tell you one of his favorite programs that we have in the city is the vacation home checks. We don't charge for that service, but we feel like it's a really important and valuable service to our community. And so we think that there are some really good public benefits associated with some of the police services, so we would continue to recommend significant subsidies for those police services. And to continue high but not full cost recovery for planning services. Chad mentioned he didn't look back to the 2007 study, but I did, and we were at 47% for planning fees as of the last study. We're hoping to get to 55 this time, so there's a little bit of an increase there into the level of subsidy that we're providing for planning services. But again, we do feel like there are some fees, some services that the city provides for which there is public benefit, even in the planning arena, that we would recommend we continue those subsidies. We are recommending an implementation that would start December 1st. It's slightly more than 60 days from tonight, but it's in compliance with the 60-day minimum from the state. There are a couple of new fees. As the council is probably aware, and none of these are probably a surprise because we've been talking about all of them for a long time, we have a new pickleball club. We have some fabulous new pickleball courts. And much like an adult softball league or basketball, some type of a league sport where if you participate in the league, we reserve the court for your team or the baseball diamond for your team for particular periods of time. If you participate in the pickleball club, the club has certain hours where the club is uses the facilities. Otherwise, they are open to the public. And I understand pickleball is a terrible amount of fun, and I have not tried it yet, but it looks interesting. We are recommending animal impound fees. I think the council is aware of that. When we did the remodel at the police station, we were able to install some kennels there so that if animals are found in our community, they can be taken to the police department, not necessarily out to the sheriff's facility right away. We are recommending some impound fee, again, to recover the costs of that. And then the medical marijuana delivery service provider, the police department has developed their recommendation, their recommended process, what they would like to do in regards to clearing and vetting medical marijuana delivery service providers. They're recommending an initial fee of $600, and it's an annual fee with the renewal being $500, and that we are recommending at full cost recovery. So essentially, the recommendations that you have in front of you, we think we will generate from fee-related activities in the balance of this fiscal year, recognizing that these fees won't take effect until December, about $700,000 in revenue. Now, that's a number that was developed in the absence of looking at the current level of activity that we are experiencing. Right now, our budget says we should collect about $623,000, $625,000 from fee revenues. We are going to exceed that in this year. I can tell you we'll be back at mid-year with the revised recommendations on those revenues because we have already collected a significant number we've seen a lot of activity coming through, particularly in the building department so far, and we're only 2.5 months into the fiscal year. So we know that those numbers are conservative numbers, and we will very likely exceed them. Ongoing revenue, if we were to have this same level of of activity and the higher fee amounts that are recommended in front of you would be about $1.2 million annually. Now, I say annually, but that's not something, again, we should take to the bank every year for the next umpteen years. That's something that I think we will see for the next couple of years because of the significant projects that we have out there on the horizon. I don't know that we will necessarily see that as a long-term ongoing revenue stream. I think we can probably count on the 700-ish every year, but I'm not sure 1.2 million in the long run is where we will see revenues from fee-related activities. But we will obviously closely monitor that every year. These recommendations would result in an overall cost recovery rate citywide of about 75%. So again, 100% for building and engineering, less than that for planning, less than that for police, but overall about 75% citywide. So with that, we will be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Any questions? Start with Councilmember Brown.
First of all, I appreciate the staff report. I called Bob earlier, and I was so confused I had a headache. So I appreciate your clarity tonight. I'm a little concerned about the planning department and fee recovery, and that's what I talked to Bob about. And I'm also, I mean, I've got a couple concerns, but the first one is if we use CPI and we jump from 30 to 55, even if we use CPI, we're not going to get to 100% cost recovery in a long time. It doesn't seem possible to get at 100% anytime soon if we use CPI.
And again, that's a council decision about are we trying to get to 100%. That would be... That would not historically be where we have set our target for planning, but it doesn't mean that we shouldn't be setting our target there. So that's something that we wouldn't value your input on if you are seeking 100% cost recovery on planning fees, and then how we would get there, we could have additional conversation.
Councilmember yeah. Brown, if I could add to that, maybe go back a couple slides where you actually have your recommendations. To be... let's go back to this. That one right there. This is what actually staff is currently recommending. So when it gets down to the policy issue of cost recovery in relationship to the amount of subsidy, this is what staff is currently recommending. And I would suggest that this might actually be where council wants to start their consideration process. Because what staff is saying is we are recommending establishing the fees so they reflect recovery of the full cost of services only for building and engineering. When it gets to planning, staff's recommendation is to establish a high fee, therefore a lower subsidy, but they're not recommending a full cost recovery. So I don't know exactly what that is, 70%, 80%. I'm sure Debbie would know a more specific number. If council believes, though, that for those services that are demand services, planning services that are eligible for fees, if council believes, though, that those should be received at full cost recovery and not some lower amount, then we would adjust the fee accordingly to be reflective of the full cost of providing the service. That, Councilmember Brown, to answer your question, that's the only way we would actually get to it is to have a starting point that establishes full cost recovery, and then in future years to try to do our best to adjust that fee. Staff is recommending using a CPI as an index, but adjust that fee to maintain full cost recovery.
I guess what I'm concerned about, Bob, based on our earlier conversation, was there seemed to be some discussion or concern that legally we could not recover full cost, basically, that we... You and I talked right. about prior to an application being filed. All that staff time is valuable time, and it takes energy and effort. Given that discussion, I just wonder how you ever get to 100% cost recovery if you don't include, you know, the entirety of what staff is doing.
Councilmember Brown, it's a very good point. And one of the elements that it's like we need to agree on going in is what are we, in fact, evaluating for cost recovery. So within planning, Mr. Wolford, to begin with, indicated that that long-range planning, that there's a variety of long-range planning activities of which there simply are no fees associated with. It's not the nature of the kind of work that there would be a fee associated. So when in this case, the way that the report has been designed and that Mr. Wolford has presented it is the full cost recovery in these cases and what the 30% versus some higher amount is referring to is those services that are eligible for having fees. It isn't necessarily all the services that planning provides. That would probably be something they could determine, but I think to begin with, it indicated that the 600-some thousand, that is not the total budget for planning. It is only that portion of it which is eligible for fee recovery.
Great. I appreciate the clarification. Thank you. That's all, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Guthrie.
So I'll just follow that up on that just a little bit for clarification. This has to do with the where we started and where we currently are. So just so I understand, it isn't that we would progressively get to 100%. It's what we're talking about is staying in this case at 55% for planning and not falling behind.
That's so, correct.
Okay, I just wanted to be sure because I got a little bit lost here. The other thing, when we look at this report and try to determine, we have this statement about what the overall fee recovery is. When I go back and look in the report at, I'm looking at, oh, for instance, this is on page 174. It's one of the little charts you have that says, you know, here's the cost, here's what we're recovering. So it's 17%, you know, 17% recovery, and I guess that would be 83% subsidy. Is that what, from the report, that's what you saw as you walked in the door? That's what it is right now before we've changed any fees. I'm wondering if there's somewhere that tells us on the individual fees what the individual subsidies are. We see the overall subsidy, but when we look at the fee schedule, I didn't see the subsidy number there. So maybe I missed it. I see people nodding at me like I did.
They are included in attachment number 2. To the study, I don't have the page number.
43. In
it should be 100 and some odd. It's after the study. The recommendation, the recommended fees, is attachment number 2, and that compares the full cost, the recommended fee, and therefore what's the remaining surplus in subsidy, and what's the recovery rate that is recommended. So let me get that. Page number for you.
Perhaps 127. 127 was one example, and 207 was the comparison.
So page 207?
Yeah.
Page 200.
All
right.
All the pages look the same.
204 is where attachment number 2 starts.
I apologize. I should ask this earlier,
yes.
But. Man, this is hard. All right. Okay, so on page 207, we're looking at this would be the planning cost for, let's use a congregate care complete facility. So this is the current, we would currently subsidize, or we would currently recover 100% of the cost for a, is this a plan, Jack? But this is an engineering fee. Okay, so is there another page that I would find the planning commission fees on? Or the planning department fees on?
204.
204? All right. Okay, I can look that over on my own here. Okay, I appreciate that. That was my one question. Thank you.
Those are recommended.
I want to find page 204.
Yes, and to clarify, those such as on 204, those are the new recommended fees. So the recovery rate is on the far right-hand corner.
Yeah, I got it.
Right-hand
okay.
side.
All right, I just didn't turn enough pages.
So by way then of continuing that, if in fact the City Council believed that planning services should be at 80%, then across the board or in some other amount, then this recommended fee schedule would therefore be adjusted accordingly so that it would reflect okay. Council's intent.
Can I ask? Just one more.
Sure, please.
And just methodology. So when we say that we're at 55%, that includes that unit number that says we're going to do 10 of these and one of these and 15 of these at these different percentages. So that's it's not just a straight average. It's in fact accounts for the actual activity.
It accounts for the activity, but it does look at the totality of the fees generated versus the totality of the costs.
Okay.
So it's not fee by fee, it's the totality of the fees and the
All
costs.
Right. All right. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Councilmember Barnage.
Thank you. So going back to sort of the same line of questioning on the planning fees. So I understand on some of these why their cost recovery is so low, because either a public benefit or also we're encouraging people to apply for them instead of making it something that, you know, they're not going to do because it's too expensive, like the appeals. But for instance, I think it was in the PowerPoint, and it was a minor use permit, and it was $484 subsidy. Are you able to go back to that slide? And I wanted to know, was that currently it is the subsidy, or is what is being proposed? Okay, so this is it. So this is currently. So if you can just explain on that minor use permit, what would be the reason for such a low recovery rate? Is it because we want people to come in and get the permit, or are we thinking if people don't, then we're going to have all these weird, funky things that aren't permitted out there in the city? Or is there some other reason?
So I may need a little help from the Community Development Director on this one, but these are temporary use permits. So it's under the minor use permit category, but these are temporary use permits.
Okay.
Many of those are issued in support of nonprofit organizations or activities that benefit the community. For example, you know, the Halloween in the Village is going to be a temporary use permit.
Okay.
So, there's some public benefit that we were trying to take into consideration.
Okay, so that's not a good example. So let me just okay. Okay, so right or the. Okay, so the next one, the lot line adjustment, that would be one that, so just the reasoning behind that, Teresa or someone.
Just a quick clarification. These are the actual results, not the recommended fees.
Right,
so this
right.
is what exists now.
Right.
So these amounts don't necessarily, it's like on that first one, 25%, and we should probably let the Director of Community Development address that. That's not necessarily what staff is recommending. That's just after 8 years of a fee that was established and then the staff costs have taken place. This is just the objective outcome of no adjustments taking to that over a period of years.
Okay. That's correct, but the staff recommendation is that this fee, which is currently set at $158, would go to $200. So we are recommending that the fee would increase, but we're still only recommending that this remain at about 30% cost recovery. So even our recommendation still reflects that we believe that there is some public benefit or some subsidy that we believe is warranted for that particular type of fee.
Okay, let me pick one from the recommended fees so I can just, I'm just trying to get an idea since it is such a subsidized. Okay, so for maybe the minor use permit in the large family daycare, I think there's a 30% recovery rate there. So maybe just the reasoning behind that as an example.
Okay.
are minor use permits are administrative approvals. We have several different categories. Large family daycare is one of them. And the fee study calculated, as Chad walked you through, everybody who touches that permit. And then we have the results of that. We do take a look at that in terms of the purpose of that permit is to provide an opportunity for somebody to come in for a large family daycare business. And if it's an extraordinarily cost, we do take that into consideration in terms of our recommendation to you. And for that one, for example, we are recommending a subsidy. And we did cross-check some of these fees. I don't think that one in particular, but some of these fees with other fees from other communities as well, just to see if we are in line.
Okay, and that brings me to another question. And I talked a little bit about it with Debbie earlier, is I have heard in the community that Arroyo Grande, you know, possibly some of the fees for development are high. So that's what I wanted to know from if you had gone to other agencies to see if those fees were in line for the, I guess it would be the building fees. I mean, we're going for the 100% cost recovery now, but with the new cost recovery, are we in line with other municipalities?
Yeah, that was one of many factors that we looked at, what the fees are in other jurisdictions, not just for building, but for all of the fees. Mm-hmm. I would say there are a few that we may be on the high end, but for the most part, we are right in there with everybody else as far as our fees go. In fact, some of them are still on the low side. Overall, yes, you could probably pick or choose one particular fee or another that's higher in our community or lower in our community. But when you look at sort of the totality of the fees, our recommended fees are in line with our neighboring jurisdictions.
Okay, thank you for that. Let's see. Okay, I have some. I have some follow-up questions. They're more specific, so we'll see where else the other conversation goes. Thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you.
So this was something that I picked up. It was actually on page 96. It was described on page 96 of the staff report. When I refer to my pages, it's the bold ones that are at the bottom of the staff report. There's quite a few pages floating around tonight. So it has to do with the each department will develop a public notification plan. Has there been any preliminary outreach to, number one, will each department be doing that as recommended? And number two, has there been any preliminary outreach to affected parties about the proposed fee increases?
So there has been some outreach already, in particular, just in the noticing for this meeting. Obviously, that's one required notification for affected parties. The outreach we're developing is really specific to the department and how we believe that what's the best way to communicate those increases in fees. So, for example, in the recreation department, you know, really the big issue in recreation is we're creating a new pickleball fee. We can probably just post that in the department, and it probably gets the word out to most of the affected parties. When you're talking development-related fees, you know, there may be a different strategy that we would use to notify the people that are most affected by that. So we are developing those recommendations for how we would get the word out. Of course, this will be on our website. We'll do everything we can to try and make the information available to all the parties that we can identify who we believe would be affected. But obviously within the limitations of we're not going to notify every potential person that might have a police towing fee, for example. You know, we will rely on some general notifications for some of these fees. But where there are high level of concern, particularly development related, we are working on how we're going to get that information out in addition to what we have already done.
Okay. The next question I have has to do with the Consumer Price Index, and I wanted to know what factors were used to determine the use of the LA region's Consumer Price Index.
So historically in our city, when we have used an index to increase, whether it's a contract for services or fees in the past, we used one of two indices. We either used the regional index, which we've used the LA index in the past, the Los Angeles index, or we've used the broader index that's the all urban consumers. That's just based on the historic practices of the city, but again, we could use any number of indices or approaches in affecting changes for future cost increases.
So I also know just through the review that there was mentioned that there was actually the U.S. Department of Labor and Statistics was also another mechanism regarding a price index. And so I just had questions. I think that was actually noted on page 100. So are those... Does one statistical resource then pull the information to create their consumer price index? Like, does the LA region price index, do they actually get that information from the Department of Labor and Statistics? Do they pull different factors? What's the benefit between that resource and the LA region's CPI?
So the LA region index is published by the Bureau of Labor Statistics.
Okay.
So the BLS has a number of indices that they have created that demonstrate inflation, and some of them are very broad, like the one that they call the CPIU is the all urban consumers. It's a representation of what it costs for a typical basket of goods and services in across the urbanized United States. And they go all the way down to very discreetly fine-tuned indices, such as what's the price of pharmaceuticals doing in a particular metropolitan area. And they have indices from everywhere in between, including certain things, excluding certain things. But it's all published by the BLS. It's all data that they gather, that they compute, and they analyze. So the index that is recommended in the resolution is a BLS, Bureau of Labor Statistics, indice. It is just a regional index,
okay,
related to the Los Angeles area rather than a more broad all urban areas, or mm-hmm. you could have the Western United States. You could have there's a number of indices that you could use, all of them coming from BLS.
Okay, that's very helpful. Okay.
Mr. Mayor and Mayor Pro Tem Harmon, what I also heard Mr. Wolford suggest that could be considered is a factor of the city's actual budget changes, which would, while the factors that are in the CPI are meaningful to the general population, as it is actually directly effective to our budget, without a doubt, labor costs and the overhead to those costs, primarily PERS and medical, are the biggest factors that would ultimately alter these rates over a period of time. I actually not heard of that as an approach, but it could be one that might help Royal Grandes, if you so choose a particular level or fee cost recovery to stay with, might be a more accurate one to do, or at least another one to consider.
And before I proceed, could you put Heather, City Attorney Whittem's mic lower, because it's like right in the middle of your forehead like a bullseye. Thank you.
And of course, that is suggesting that without having consulted with our administrative services director.
Exactly. No, I understand what you're conveying. I just want to make sure that if we have the opportunities that we are looking at them during this discussion, which brings me to the next question related to another term about our if there's any benefit to establishing our own inflation factor. You know, if there is more benefit than using the CPI, and I guess given the CPI returns of the various regions that are option, you know, what would that look like for our city if we actually did our own inflation factor?
Well, there's probably a number of ways we could go about doing that. As was suggested, we may just look at our own increase in our budget for staffing-related costs, for example. If staffing-related costs have gone up by 5% in the last year, then maybe fees need to go up by 5% because most of our fees are very staff-related, staff cost-driven. So we could adopt something like that. We could choose any number of indicators. Some of them may be more reflective or less reflective of the experience that we have here in the city. Using the way our own budget changes or our own staffing costs change over time probably results in the closest tie between keeping fees at whatever cost recovery level is established over the long term, because most of those are staffing related. Using something like CPI, simple, it's easy, we know what it is, it's published by an independent party, we're not cherry picking or manipulating any kind of result. It may not be the most reflective of the experience that we are having here in our city, which is also another reason why these fee studies are typically recommended to be done about every 5-6 years, so that you don't get too far behind your actual costs, regardless of what mechanism you use to update the costs in the interim.
So do we know of any neighboring city or anybody in this county that actually does their own inflation rate? Is that really more of an obscure, or maybe more to a larger municipality where that would be more of a benefit?
I don't know off the top of my head, but I didn't research that, so I can look into that and see what other cities are doing.
It was just, it's more of a curiosity. Mm-hmm. It seems like the inflation developing our own is just considering our size and our other focus and goals. It seems like the CPI would probably get us in the right direction and be prudent instead of spending all our resources on that kind of task, so the staff can like sigh relief, no more time studies. Then I also have, I just have a couple more questions, and this has to do with the recommendation to increase cost recovery for the planning fees is from 30% to going up to 55%. And I think this question was already answered. You know, looking at the examples contained in the study and then in the recommendation, I think page 204 really gave us that information related to this is what it is, this is what the proposed fee is, or this is full recovery, this is the proposed fee, and this is what the percentage is. So I guess now that I've just talked my question out, I think I already have those answers from my fellow council members. So sorry for that redundancy. And then the last one, so these fees are going, if they go forward as recommended or however we determine tonight, then they'll go into effect December 1st. So I guess my question would be that what happens with any of the projects that are now currently in the pipeline, depending on where they are in their process, then can they expect added fees to their projects? The ones that are already kind of being cultivated, what would that kind of look like for the public?
So anyone that has already submitted their application, for example, their planning application, they've submitted their application, they've paid their fees, we're not going to come back and increase fees on them. They're already in the process. Okay. But you may be between having your entitlements worked out, but not yet have applied for your building permits. Mm-hmm. It depends on when you apply for those building permits. If you apply for them before December 1st, you will be charged the fee that is in effect before December 1st. If you apply for them after December 1st, you'll be charged the fee that is in effect after December 1st. So we are cautiously optimistic, maybe, if that's the right word, that we're going to get a, potentially could get a flurry of activity in the building department with projects that are out there that have received their entitlements, they're ready to move forward, but just haven't quite moved on their building fees. They may come in, this may motivate them to come in before December 1st if they can to secure the current fees rather than the new fees. But anyone that comes in after December 1st would be charged the fees that are in place after December 1st.
And then that then goes back to the notification plan?
Correct.
Okay. All right. Thank you. That's all I have.
Kim, regarding the pickleball fee, is that typically a full cost recovery, or what is the target in that, and were those types of fees studied?
The pickleball fee was not studied in the same way that we studied these other fees. Most of the recreation fees are much more market-based, so we looked at what other... For example, the city of Paso Robles has a pickleball court, and they have a pickleball fee. Theirs is $125 a year. Ours is $95 a year, so we're a bargain. Come here. Join your pickleball club here. Lots of fun to be had here.
We have a nice court here.
We have a great court here.
It's brand new.
It's new. It's lovely. So it's not so much about the cost of that service as much as it is market-driven and the facility that's available.
Okay, thank you. And then we said that fees should be related to a private benefit. So I'm struggling with the concept. We have building and engineering, and we're targeting full fee cost recovery. Planning, if this is items that are of individual benefit, why are we not targeting full cost recovery, or is there some things that are indivisible there from private and public benefit?
Well, I think actually maybe the question that Council Member Barnage brought up about the large home daycare facility, where we want someone to come in to let us know that they're operating a daycare facility out of their home. There's all kinds of reasons why we want to know about that. Of course, they're the ones driving the need for the reviews and the work that goes into processing that. But there's also benefit to the neighbors and the community as a whole to know where these things are located and are they in the correct zoning and have the neighbors been notified that this is occurring. And so there are some benefits to the community as a whole, even though you may say, well, the person that's running that daycare center is receiving all of the benefit. Perhaps it could be viewed that way, but it could also be viewed that the public at large is benefiting from that process as well. So that's what one of the factors that we took into consideration when recommending what those fees might be. Appropriate zoning for some of these activities, notification of neighbors that these things are occurring. These are all good things that we want, the community to have, and it adds to the livability of the community. If that fee is set beyond, it may provide a barrier for someone to come in. If the fee is set too high, they may say, I know I'm supposed to go tell the city, but I don't want to pay that fee. Those are some of the considerations that we looked at when developing our recommendations. That's just one example.
Mr. Mayor, in answering that, and I just wanted to verify this by looking at it, the planning fees are particularly complicated, and somebody had mentioned the devil is in the details, and it really is on that. For example, there are some activities that staff is recommending within the planning all the way up to 100% when you look at the actual line items, and others 80%. And when you look at the nature of those, like a lot line adjustment, which is very specific to the two people that are two or one or two or however many people, very specific to them, that's looking, the staff is recommending a much higher level of cost recovery on that because it has such a limited benefit, whereas other fees are much lower than that because while there is an applicant coming in, there's another level of benefit that is broader to the community. So a great amount of, in the planning world, there is a great amount of thought that has to go into each one of them, and some of it is a little bit of estimating and also seeing how it compares with other fees and also an encouragement for people to come in to pull the fee because to do the work because it benefits the community as a whole. So I think that hopefully that kind of goes a bit to your the question of the private benefit, and this is reflecting when there is a greater private benefit, the fee recovery is recommended to be higher.
Okay, thank you for that. That's a good explanation. Just one thing that just it's a specific fee question, and it just that a little bit of detail that bothers me on retaining walls. I know the first 100 linear feet there for building is, and then in some of the others I see square feet on retaining walls, so I'm just struggling with the disjoint on that.
That may be that may be a typo wherever we had square feet. We did have some inconsistencies. The building official, I think, has tried to catch all of those. It was referenced as both linear and square feet a couple of different places, but hopefully this time we have caught all of those inconsistencies. We'll take one more look through it to make sure we did.
Okay, thank you. I think those are most of my questions for now. So are there any other questions?
No.
Then let's have public comment on the item.
First thing I'd like to comment on, to see that the planning department is only at 30%, but our police departments were covering 34%. Wow. Not good. The one thing I didn't hear you guys talk about, and I'd like to have it talked about, is it's been 10 years since we've done this study. I mean, we're behind the eight ball right now. I'd like for you to be considering tonight doing this every 5 years, like Ms. Malicote suggested, because if we want to get the planning department up to 70-75% recovery, we can't wait another 10 years. You know, like they said, the CPI is going all over the place. We need to stay on this a bit more, I think. Medical marijuana fees were brought up tonight. And you're saying that this goes into effect December 1st. Can these fees be paid, if this goes through tonight, can they be paid tomorrow so that we can start finally helping Devon Ward? You know, there are people out there that need this medicine, and they're not getting it still. That really bothers me. I think that does it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have an answer for that question? Perhaps district council might answer that one about can we put fees or collect fees before we've properly noticed them and all of that?
Yeah, no, we can't collect the fee before we impose it, but it's my understanding that the application process and the selection for the medical marijuana delivery service providers, and then after that the individual drivers, that the application and the selection process for that will put us right around probably about the same timing.
Thank you very much. Is there any other comment on this item?
Good evening, Council. My name is Leanne Akins, and I have a couple concerns, and then I have a couple questions. Obviously, our subsidies are in the high range, and our recovery is in the low range. That's concerning for our general fund. That's concerning for the taxpayers. My questions are related to the following. I'm curious why the fire department was not part of this study. maybe it's because they don't necessarily collect fees, but just out of curiosity why that was not included. My other question is related to minor use permits. So the fee doesn't seem to be incredibly high, and I understand that it's probably going to increase to about $200, but what happens when a minor use permit fee is waived? How many times has that happened, and how is that factored into the overall recovery totals, if at all? My third question is related to what would be the basis for lowering fees for specific constituents, and what are the parameters or the factors in making these decisions? It seems arbitrary right now, or at least not very clear as to how those decisions are made. And then my final question is related to the planning fees. So on one of the slides, it talked about how we want to keep the fees high, or at least the recovery rate high. But I'm wondering if there shouldn't be like a set number or percentage that we're focusing on to get to before a vote is taken tonight, so that council can give staff clear direction. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Can we answer a couple of those questions, the fire department waivers?
So the fire department was not included in the study simply because the FCFA is somewhat independent from the city. They will be doing their own fee study for the services that they provide and adopting their own fee schedule for those services. It was intentionally omitted from our study because they are independent from us. The services that the city does provide that are fire-related, because we do have the chief building inspector does a lot of fire inspections and plan checks and some of those activities that are performed by the city were included in this study and are part of the recommendations that are encompassed in the building department. So the services performed by FCFA were separated from the services performed by the city. I'm not sure on the minor use permits how often we waive those. I know it does happen. I don't have any numbers in front of me tonight about how often that happens or you know, to what degree that happens, but we can get that information. In general, obviously, it reduces the overall cost recovery if you don't collect any fee, even where a fee was set. But that is certainly at the purview of the council to waive those fees in times or consideration when they feel that's appropriate. There are some industry standards related to lower fees for specific constituents. Mr. Wolford mentioned, often we have services related to youth activities that receive some level of subsidy. Again, you know, you can argue whether or not it does provide a public benefit. Sometimes these are activities aimed towards the elderly or a low-income group or some other vulnerable population where you may feel that there is some public benefit. I wouldn't say that our city has a clearly defined list of what those are and when those are, but I think that we are within the industry standard of when we subsidize for those types of nonprofit organizations or youth or senior-related activities.
And are not those typically, when they come to council, the council determines that there's a something in the public interest or public benefit to be derived from those types of waivers?
Yes, certainly when the waivers come to the council, that's part of the consideration, is that there is the public benefit of that activity.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Continuing with public comment, would anyone else like to comment?
Good evening, Council, Honorable Mayor, City Staff. Cynthia Gonzalez with Elite Care Enterprises. I did want a little bit of clarification on the licensing fees. I know that we did have some conversations and we're actually engaged in that discussion with the chief and the community director in trying to come up with a good establishment of what the rates and fees were. And since then, there's been a lot of discoveries that have taken place on my behalf. We were working with the five cities as well, trying to come up with a reasonable discussion and a reasonable route, so to speak, so that the deliveries could continue to respond. Because as we know, in 2018, all deliveries are off the board. Everything's going to expire. None of that's going to be legally available anywhere in California. So there's a lot that we're dealing with. I'm meeting with Lori Ajax, who is the Chief Bureau of Cannabis Regulations. I've met with her twice now. We have another meeting that's taking place next week. They're trying to get up to snuff as fast as the rest of us in this kind of a gray area of discussion. But what we did discover, though, in doing some of the research, because that's our background, corporate America, we did research for Fortune 500 corporations. And to date, what we noticed is that there's over 76 deliveries in your backyard right now. You have some of your, and I'm not here to out anyone, but you have some of your shops that are smoke shops that are really, they're kind of a delivery outlet. So the conducting of the business is being taken place without the permits. I mean, it's happening now. I mean, we know that. We've talked to the chiefs. They're aware of that. They're not problematic citizens, so it hasn't been brought to light to your attention. It has not been anything that's been publicly discussed because it just hasn't been problematic. But in light of those 60 to 70 deliveries that are doing business in your backyard and all the five cities' backyard, I think the objective was just to try to legitimize and find a permit structure so that there could be that reasonable balance of service. And I'm not suggesting that everyone is on the medical benefit side, as some of us are strongly proponents of. But when it gets down to the legalization of some of these fees, and I understand that the city attorney indicated that we cannot even operate until December 1st or January 1st, is that the understanding, if these fees even get accepted by the city council and the mayor's office and this evening? Is that the clarity of that? That's one question I have.
Okay.
And my second question I have is, since we had met with the chief and the community director, I did have some time to look at some of the other cities that are comparable to the size and stature of Arroyo Grande and what their licensing fees are. And I think we need to revisit, just for the sake of time, Goleta, that has a $125 application fee as opposed to the fees that were discussed here. And one thing that they did include, which I think is going to be really important, is there needs to be an insurance of $1 million or somewhere along there, and that wasn't discussed. So it's for the safety of the constituents, the patients. So insurance bond issue needs to be really kind of addressed, and that wasn't discussed, and that's not part of the processing. So, again, I just wanted to be proactive, and we certainly want to do this right. You're all making a very important decision to do this right for your community, for the benefit of your constituencies as well. So if we continue to bring ideas and concepts to the table or open up discussion, we're not trying to make it more complicated for all of you. Please bear in mind that we'd like to move the dial faster. Our hands are tied right now. We're not servicing anyone, but we're hoping to do this right, and we'd like to be of help in that process.
We
sorry
understand.
For taking the extra time.
Thank you very much for the comment. And the city, of course, has a process that we have to go through that involves noticing and everything as well. But let me ask the city attorney to please respond to those questions.
Well, no one will be allowed to operate until they've gone through the whole application process. The city has to do according with our ordinance, we'll need to do a notification or a posting that the city is accepting applications. The chief then reviews the applications. There's background checks. There's a variety of things that have to happen with those applications. And then the chief will be picking up to three delivery service providers. That's the process for retaining the delivery driver services. Then there's a separate process for permitting each individual driver who works for those services. So there's a whole process, and the chief and other staff, administrative services director, have been working on getting in place what that application will look like, how the process will be handled, and that's all ongoing. And I couldn't tell you when that would all be finalized and when we'd have our first operator.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Is there other public comment on the item? Okay, hearing none, I'll close the public comment period and come back to council for discussion.
Mike.
We'll probably need the community development director to answer this, because I just had a couple more questions on, I understand the family daycare subsidy, but there are a couple others here that seem extreme that I'd kind of like to hear about. So one of them on here is a major subdivision subsidy that in which our recovery rate is only 30% or 70% subsidy. And I'm wondering, there's two of them on here. It's also the single lot is a 20%. And the other odd one to me was a house occupation permit is at 25%. So I wonder if those three you could sort of give us the thought process for the large subsidy there.
Jim, what number is that so I can comment?
Okay.
Are you looking at this chart?
I'm on page 204.
I'm on page 104.
Okay. 19, 24, and 25. Sorry, I should have started there.
There's three different page numbers, so it's hard.
Okay, I'm using the bold one that says item 10, page number 204.
Okay, well, looking at the recovery rate for subdivisions, larger subdivisions, it looks like we have a high recovery rate. In fact, for 5 to 20 lots, 100%. Whereas, is that one category you were looking at?
Okay, so I'm looking at, so let's go major subdivisions across. Says that the full cost of a unit is $11,655. The recommended fee is $3,496. So the subsidy or surplus is $8,000, so there's only a 30% recovery. That's line number 24.
Oh, I see. And that is... likely that one was likely looked at in terms of being in line with that one. I think that one was one we adjusted for being in line with other communities. That cost of $12,000 is a part of the application. They will have to pay additional fees per lot above and beyond, and I'm going to hesitate here because I'm trying to look at the time and materials line on line 45, Debbie. Do the per lot costs pertain to that? That's my recollection. So that's a base fee for them coming in for a subdivision, and we did look at those across other communities, and that $12,000 or near $12,000 fee was already kind of on the upper end.
Well, the $12,000 cost is the actual cost, the fee.
If we were going to charge that
right.
cost, yeah.
That's true, but the fee's only $3,500. Are you saying that the $3,500 fee, which is the recommended fee, that's a competitive fee? Because it's not the $11,000 I'm talking about. It's the essentially $35,000,
$34.96. I think part of the consideration on that one was the increase in the fee. The current fee for that category is $630. So we felt that the increase in fee was substantial. It does still reflect a substantial subsidy as well, I don't have the comparison on that particular fee to the other jurisdictions in front of me, so I'm not sure how it compared to those other jurisdictions, but I believe that
Okay, and why don't we just quickly, Steve, I mean, I guess the other two are the same thing. House occupation, you know, which is a pretty standard thing, is at 25%.
Yeah, I do want to make one clarification to the line 24. That is a design review, major project design review, for if we're reviewing design guidelines associated with a large track. So it's in addition to another fee that they're concurrently coming in with. For example, they'll come in for the subdivision, and later they'll have to get design review done for that. Those guidelines pertaining to that subdivision, and that is that fee. So that was a consideration of bringing that fee down in line compared to what it previously or currently costs.
So are they going to pay this design review fee, and there's no staff time spent making that happen? So there is
still staff time, and it is an increase, still a pretty large increase from what our current fee is.
Okay.
So if we would have increased it the full amount, that would have been just, that was one consideration we're proposing.
Okay, so, and I know you, if you know this number, I'll be blown away, but what was our cost recovery rate on this particular item? I mean, is this something where our CPI just failed us completely? Our CPI increases failed us completely, that we were at 55%, and now we're down where it's somewhere around, you know, it must be around 25% or something if this is because the price is going to go up, or was it always low?
I think this is one where we actually captured our costs, and whereas we these things take, you know, it does take some time to go through these design guidelines, they were likely included in the previous fee for subdivision. So it's something that was clarified through the fee study.
So in other words, through this particular study versus the other study, we discovered that we are actually spending far more time than we thought on this item. On this process.
I'm going to have Matt.
Okay.
Did some particular calculations with this, so I'm going to let him answer.
Absolutely, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. Thank you for asking this question. So, what this fee used to be called was the design review, and essentially what we used that for was if you had design guidelines come in with a track map, whereby we're looking at the complex as a whole, we're looking at the track as a whole. The way we actually did the fee estimations is in a vacuum looking at that fee itself. So if we were to take a look at these design guidelines, somebody comes in and says, I want to do design guidelines for nothing else, just design guidelines. Well, looking at, okay, how long is it going to take us to review those? How long is it going to take us to take it through ARC, Planning Commission? If it has to come to council, what time is associated with that? Well, nobody brings in design guidelines for nothing. So this is in conjunction with the actual track map. So a lot of that effort is duplicated because you're already bringing forward analysis on the map itself. You're writing reports going to Planning Commission, City Council, that type of thing. So in looking at that, that was one of the justifications for actually reducing that overall cost, is because it's in conjunction with something else. It never does truly stand alone.
Okay, so the only way to look at this would be to add the two together, subtract the cost, and come up with, okay.
Correct.
What's the other, okay, could you just do the other two real quick for me, and then I'll ask my other question.
Home occupation permits were, I believe, reviewed in terms of other cities. That was an easy comparison. And I don't believe there's other consideration on the home ocs. And that's a fee where it's, you know, to also to the applicant, it's a, encouragement for them to come in and get permitted for their use so that we can make sure that it's not a use that's going to use hazardous materials or something. It's indeed an office and a home. And we do like to encourage those to come in, and we can regulate those. And I'm sorry I lost your last one category.
That would... So home occupation and single lot probably is going to be the same answer as large lot, but... So there's some other. So what is the then the follow up on that? What is the other item that I should be calculating into this? That's calculated into this design guideline is that I'm going to guess is 100% recovery or something. If we're going to get somewhere near something reasonable, you were saying it's part of a much bigger process. What's the other half of the big process? And Matt said it, but I couldn't read that fast, so.
I guess to add on that, my confusion on this is, if I'm reading this correctly, my line number 23, minor use permit architectural review, colon, next line is 24, major minor use permit, kind of a contradiction in terms, but related to architectural review, such as subdivisions, and we've determined the full cost is over $11,000.
For example, there'll be a small project whereby it comes in for a permit, a viewshed review permit, architectural review permit, and that's done in kind of one fell swoop. We make sure the setbacks are correct. We make sure it goes through design review, and it's a minor project. A subdivision could come in conjunction with a PUD, a planned unit development, where it's reviewed with guidelines all included, because they're asking for some consideration for small lots, for example, where that design reviews is included in the process. And then there's those track maps that come in just for the lot, just for the subdivision, and then subsequently they'll come in for and bring in their guidelines for application to the whole subdivision, and we review those guidelines. So those are three different variations of those fees.
So are those variations or are those additions? I guess
those
because it sounds like they're
additions. Types of fees. That's why you have different fee categories. So we looked at the cost for each of them independently, because sometimes they're come in independently. Sometimes there's a subdivision and we don't see those design guidelines for a year afterwards. And sometimes they come in together. And that was part of the ferreting out of these fees. So we did recommend a lower recovery rate on some of those guideline review, because really we didn't have to go back and review the whole thing. We were just focused on those guidelines.
So I guess what I should take away from this is that the $11,000 is not an accurate reflection of what this really costs. Is what it sounds like. I mean that you're doing something else there other than you're adding something else into it.
Chad, I'll leave it to
yeah,
Chad.
Okay. Yeah, bring the count on. Put to sleep.
Rip for something else.
So this is not an uncommon situation in these types of studies where there are innumerable permutations of what fees get added together, and what we do when we do the analysis is we look at each service type independent of each other. And what the idea is, if there are times when there are combos where two different fees should be charged for this, you know, there's two different activities that are all involved with the same project, where if you added them both together, it would be too much because you're looking at them as if they were independent with all the application and initial review and all that, which is happening in a consolidated fashion. So the idea is we set these things up independently, but the suggestion or the recommendation is that if reality starts to intrude that, no, this particular type of fee really is always done, upon later thinking about it, if it's always done with another, then you essentially cut out part of the second fee that's getting added on so that you don't overcharge. So that it's more of a combo fee. This is something that happens fairly regularly, but to do the analysis, we have to look at them separately in order to calculate them. And there's too many permutations to, you know, set up fees for all those different examples. So the idea is when they're combined, you cut out a certain percentage, and I think it's a very reasonable approach to look at it in a comparative way or to independently come up with a, you know, what you would cleave out of that to combine. I don't know if that helped. that's what happens fairly regularly.
Well, I think it helps us explain how the methodology is done. I'm not sure it helps me with the comfort level that it's an accurate number without seeing those other two fees side by side with it. And that's what I'm having trouble with here.
Yeah, independently, it is an accurate number. When you know if that particular fee was served aside from anything else, when that was in and of itself, it was done.
Let me imagine a scenario where I think this might be the case. Somebody went and got approved 10 years ago, and they come back and say, you know what, I don't like these houses. I want to do a whole design review. This reflects that cost.
That's correct. That's a great example. It kind of happened on Grace Lane, for example. It was approved a long time ago, came in. Many years later, we had to kind of dust off everything and take a look at it. In this case, we probably wouldn't be, you know, the cost is accurate, and we're kind of giving a big subsidy to that. But normally, they come in fairly close together.
But when, so for instance, when that does happen in that situation, because of this large subsidy, we're nowhere near cost recovery.
When it does come in together?
No, when it comes in together, I'm going to say, you're saying that it averages out, that we've collected so much money on the other half of this that we break even though we because we're really not doing the work twice. When we did that Grace Lane, if we did it based on this 30% recovery rate, because we did have to start over, we subsidized that to 70%. And just okay.
Right. So yes.
Now I understand. I won't say I necessarily like it, but I understand it. Okay. That was, and the other two, just to get back to home occupation, is purely based on the fact that other cities have a much lower fee. Now, do we do the same work? In other words, have we set up a process that is significantly higher, maybe than other cities?
We don't know the comparison of their work effort to our work effort, and I wouldn't necessarily characterize that they have, for example, the fee for home occupation permit in Grover Beach is $66, in San Luis Obispo it's $141. So anywhere between $66 and $141 is kind of the market. And we also looked at the fact that we're going to increase it from $84 to $112. And so what it plays in there as well. So we looked at the market, we looked at the increase, we looked at the public benefit of knowing where these home occupation establishments are occurring. All of that factored into our recommendation.
Okay. All right. Thank you. That answers my question. Now I'm trying to imagine what my comments are going to be. But I do appreciate that. Thank you, Teresa. I'll start with what I think is the easy one. I think we clearly have to work. CPI is not going to be a workable number for us. I don't think there's no the comment here that we should do this, you know, more often. When I hear about the amount of staff time and what I suspect is, you know, significant consultant expenses, doing one of these more often. I remember hearing this. This is why we're doing the CPIs, because it's going to cost us more than the CPI increase if we were to restudy it. But clear, if there are other alternatives, it was always presented in the past that there was an alternative. You can pick your CPI index, but that's all you can do. And I think it's absolutely the problem here is twofold. Is one is that the requirements of review keep rising, which would absolutely require a study, but also that the CPI does not reflect the increases in our city's expenses. So if we can find an alternative that, you know, doesn't just create a hole, I just can't imagine that the alternative would be as time consuming as what you just went through. And it sounded like there might be a very simple process. If it's something like simply that, you know, our average, you know, wage went up by 3%, that's a far more accurate number for us to use, even though planning might have gone up by more or less, or police might have gone up by more or less. That's far more in a very quick number, I would think. So I'd like to see us. I don't know whether we have to make that decision tonight, how we're going to do this next time, but that is something that I think needs more study than simply to try to pick another CPI index.
One thing I'd like to address also is what is our objective here? So I would ask each of the council members to comment on that. In other words, in terms of policy for cost recovery, is full cost recovery our goal? And if so, in which areas and which areas might we look toward less than full cost recovery?
Well, and I will say, as we can see from the discussion here about what is even full cost, let alone full cost recovery, and then what is a very subjective decision, for instance, about whether there's such a big black market in illegally occupied homes that we need to make it really easy to come in and maybe be told no, I'm willing to talk about what a goal might be. I think that sort of backing into it, if we think 55% is too low, that maybe some percentage is higher. But I do think that on that comment, we have to consider. I mean, we like to think of this as all being big developers, and they've got a big profit margin. I mean, but there's actually a lot of small guys in here who are probably have far less ability to deal with these, for home improvements and for a lot of smaller and a lot of residents who are going to see significantly higher fees in Arroyo Grande than it was in Grover Beach. We already hear this, that if you're a business and you want to do a minor use permit in Grover Beach, it's a whole lot less expensive than it is here, not just because of the direct fees, but because of all the other fees. So I do think that's a consideration that we have to include if we're going to ask to increase this particular piece of, because I do think there are parts of this that do that probably should be somewhat subsidized. Even though you can argue pretty easily that this is a private use, but I think, for instance, signs are an area that are relatively consuming for staff time, but are very important to small business operators who have very difficult navigating this process. So as far as that particular, I'd be open to hearing about some sort of general increase. But then if we're going to go in that direction and we're going to come back, then I would really like to see the ones that are based on comparisons to other cities, to see those come back with those comparisons. If we're saying that we need to be competitive, well, maybe we should be closer to San Luis Obispo than Grover Beach. Is Grover Beach 6 months away from doing one of these rate studies? I think there are other considerations for the comparison there. So I'd be open to hearing about another. We can talk about increasing the police department as well. There are those, but I will say that the police department's fee area is not a particularly big profit center. If we were to move it significantly, it's not going to make it's not going to move the needle very much. Whereas planning clearly is. So I'll just add it. So I'm open to hearing what other people think about the possibility of 55%, particularly if we could stay there. It's not like it's not like we have, even though we seem to have exceptionally low rates right now, like it's really just attracted a whole lot of people to come here because we have low rates. For these big projects, this is considered more of an annoyance, I think, than a major expense for most of the big operators. Whereas for the small operators, it really matters. So those are my comments related directly to that. So I guess my direction would be that if there's a significant council desire to increase the average here, if you will, increase the total cost recovery, then if we're going to bring this back, there are some other things that I would like to see included in that return. if that's not the direction, then I think we're probably, without really getting into every detail of it, which, you know, the wonky part of me really wants to do, and exactly what, you know, what are the number of units, you know, what are if you change this one by 25%, does it matter because there's really only two of them happening all year? I mean, large subdivisions, how many large subdivisions are we going to see in the next 5 years? You know, not a lot. So those are my thoughts. I think the key going forward is if we do want to push this number up, then there's a couple of things I would want to see. But if that's not the desire, I'd be prepared to move forward with it as it is. Thank you.
Councilmember Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm in agreement with a lot of what Councilman Guthrie said. I would just point out a couple things. Labor costs don't anywhere near reflect similar to the CPI. We have $17 million in unfunded liabilities. We have higher medical costs. And I think whatever formula we should use should be based on some sort of labor cost. That's just generally my thought. I mean, there could be some other methodology, but and I was thinking also maybe just a flat rate per year. I do think we should move closer to 100% over time. I don't think we should do it right away. I think even if the council adopts this particular fee increase and leaves it as is, that we should make it January 1, because I think people should have extra time to kind of digest what they're going to have to deal with. I don't think it's fair. Even 60 days, I don't think is enough time to get the word out and kind of educate people on what they should be doing. So I would be in favor of moving the timeline out 30 days just to give people more time to kind of assimilate themselves to the new reality. I really appreciate the study, and I appreciate your discussion of it, because when I talked to Bob this morning, I was confused, to say the least. It was difficult for me, and I hate admitting that, but that's the reality of it. I was thinking, why not do it, you know, 5% a year or some percentage increase based on what we know our general labor increases are based on contracts we do with our employees, plus what we know our general increases are for health insurance and our unfunded pension liabilities, plus our normal pension liabilities beyond the unfunded, that we could come up with a formula that gets closer to 100%. Should it be 100%? Obviously, I don't think not. It shouldn't be. But the fact that planning is at such a low rate, even with the increases recommended by the study, I think it's too low. And I think we should be working towards some higher number, whatever that might be. And I know that's a hardship, like Jim said, to the single homeowners, the people doing a single project that are running out of a family checkbook. I understand that's a difficult thing. But our current, in my humble opinion, like, we can't keep going the way we are. We have to figure out some way to have the collection match the actual costs of what it's costing us to do. And I think this is absolutely a step in the right direction. And I know it was a difficult process for everybody involved, Debbie Malicote and the consultant and every department head that was involved. So I would look forward to some sort of council consensus on some higher rate over time. I would appreciate the fact that it would maybe be 90 days out versus 60 to give people more time to assimilate. But other than that, I'm willing to go along generally with whatever the council direction would be. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Councilmember Barnage.
Thank you. I went into this really thinking that, you know, of course we have to do full cost recovery because that makes sense. We have to get paid. You know, we have to not put the burden on the taxpayers. We need to be paid for what we're doing. But then looking at it, you know, obviously deeper as far as the planning department and the police department, as we've all talked about this evening, there's definitely public benefits to some of those. And when you actually go through them line by line and you sort of envision what they are, then you know you can sort of get a sense of that. The vacation checks was a perfect example, and I hadn't even thought of that one. So full cost recovery, I mean, we have full cost recovery right now on the building and the engineering and 55 on the planning. I don't think it's realistic for the police department to have 100% full cost recovery. I don't know if someone mentioned that or not, but just because some of the things are a public benefit and we want to make sure that we are still providing the services that are for a range of people. And as Debbie mentioned, some of the other fees are dropped for certain groups, elderly, low-income groups, and children. I think that some of the fees, looking through $3,000, are going up to a $16,000 fee, $2,100 to a $6,000 fee. So some of those, for, as Jim mentioned, for a large developer doing a huge project, not a big deal, but for someone who's doing a smaller project, maybe two PUDs, maybe a home improvement project. So I'd like possibly, depending on where we go with this tonight, to maybe have a phased approach to, if we go higher, if the consensus of the council is go a lot higher on the planning part of it, a phased approach on, and I don't know if we can piecemeal some of it out, but I understand the concept, but I also am concerned with some of the fees that are going to impact people that, like Tim said, out of a small family checkbook. So I guess I'll see where the council discussion goes, but those are my thoughts right now.
Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. First of all, Mr. Wolford, I so appreciate what you do and your willingness to do it. Based on the complexities, having to kind of herd the kittens or, you know, of the staff and get the accuracies. But not only you get the really good information from our staff, but then you have to do all of those complex, checks and balances related to the data that you do receive. Accurate statistics are so important. You need to have them as clean as you can to get us this information. So, again, thank you very much, and I was very glad that you were also involved in the 07 study and your familiarity with where we were and where we kind of need to get to. Staff, I've done time studies before. I've done these types of things before. They're just really hard. They're tedious. They're hard. You're trying to balance all of that as well as your other workload. So I just needed to, accommodate you for that. I am satisfied with the explanation related to why it wouldn't be prudent to establish our own inflation index and the use of the Bureau of Labor Statistics and the LA Region Index. Although I do appreciate Councilmember Brown's comments about, and also Councilmember Guthrie's comments related to maybe a better barometer, one that would be able to include labor, healthcare, and retirement. But I have certain caution there also, because we need to balance those rates related to the reasonableness, there's a certain term. I don't want it to appear that we are now going to balance our concerns of rising cost, health care, of our unfunded liability on the backs of applicants. I would like to see, maybe another direction or a balance there. But I think we can gain some related to maybe an established rate. Related to the homework assignment that the mayor gave us regarding the cost recovery and what our goals are, do we want to go full? Do we want to go combination a little less? My concern there is that we're coming from a 2007 fee schedule. We're bringing it forward literally to the future, So we have this current analysis. We can see very clearly some of the jumps in the fees. So although I think it's important, I think maybe this isn't the right time to make that kind of decision. Roll out what the recommendation is. See how those fees come in. See how the plan works. There's just so many dynamics and complexities that I just think the full cost is a little premature, but I think it's one we have to recognize and develop a plan to get to. So I think that would be where I would be headed. I am concerned about those folks that want to open a daycare. They move here, you know, specifically to do that. We've got great schools. We have a lot of need for daycare. They come in and they realize that the costs are just prohibited from them, from doing that. So there's that balance there. I guess the other thing is, someone had mentioned that it was shocking to hear, maybe shocking is too harsh a word, but, you know, wow, it's been 8 years. What the heck happened in 8 years? Well, why are we only dealing with this, why didn't we do it more timely? But I also think when you look at what historically happened within these last 8 years, you know, we had an economic crash, basically. So if you look at the need of this expense and the consulting fees, you know, what kind of applications were really coming in over the last 8 years? What big subdivisions actually were processed in the last 8 years? So, you know, for me, the reasons of the economic downturn in the level of volume kind of explains perhaps why, you know, at 5 years ago, we didn't bring this forward because of what we were dealing with in the bigger economic picture. I think it's obvious we have some catching up to do. I think the analysis and the cost and the other specifics were comprehensive, valuable, provided the supporting information needed to justify the fee increases. I think we could all, have discussions with residents and applicants related to the justification of these fee increases. I think the fee recovery is also one of our goals as council. You know, we wanted to really look at all of our fees and get them up to speed because we're really trying to look for a sustainable economic plan. This is one of these opportunities that will be a very big part of that plan. So I think, you know, that's where, you know, we're all in the right direction there. I do have some concerns. I think this was very difficult. Councilmember Brown used the word difficult. I'm right there with you, Mr. Brown. I'm adding the word frustration to the, working through the master fee schedule. The information was really important and really critical. But it took a long time to kind of get from point A to point B. But we're there, and that's really good. The supplemental information that you provided that really just gave us what we just reviewed, I think that provided the clarity that I needed. The last thing I think, two more things, is regarding the marijuana delivery fees. So I really appreciate Ms. Gonzalez coming here again and speaking so eloquently related to the delivery fees. But she mentioned the city of Goleta. Goleta has been in this business for quite some time. Goleta is a much larger city. So our fees were based on a cost analysis and a very comprehensive cost analysis related to what it would be for us to actually do all of the processing. And that's how we came up with the $600 fee. Maybe Goleta, they have a larger size city, so perhaps their cost analysis actually supported a $120 fee. So I just wanted to clarify that also. So my long story short would be, I think, based on what I just said, I think we need to
kind of creep up from the 30% to 55% and see how that goes. I also want to do that because there is economic opportunity here for us. We have a lot of projects in the pipeline that will not be impacted, but we don't know even in the next 6 months or a year what other projects might be coming our way, and I certainly wouldn't want to deter them by having a really big swing in certain planning fees. So unless there's a real big push, I think I would be more supportive of following the measured approach that the staff has recommended. I think that's it. Thank you.
Okay. I would also like to thank Mr. Wolford and the staff for the great deal of effort. It's very obvious there was a great deal of effort that went into that on everyone's part, and I sincerely appreciate it. This is a start on something that we need to focus on long-term and going forward. The portions of it that I'm a little bit discouraged with, and I think it goes to Mr. Guthrie's comments as well. Probably we've, you know, in cable TV and internet service and so forth, they talk about bundling and unbundling. And it looks to me like some of these fees that we've got here should probably be unbundled, identified, and then where there's a group of them together, maybe some project uses A, B, D, K, and L off the list, and they don't use C, E, F, G. And therefore, we can accurately cost and charge what the actual cost is. In terms of our goals, I think we should aim for 100% cost recovery, especially for engineering and building. And I think we should aim for probably more than 55% in planning. We may get there over time. So I also kind of want to look at it on the flip side. There is obviously an impact on the individual paying the fees if the fees are raised rather dramatically. But the flip side of that is that the fees that we don't collect are being borne by the taxpayers, and I think that's unfair. So I would move to increase the applicable fees as rapidly as possible, and in terms of the ones where we want 100% recovery, I would say that should be immediate. The increase in planning fees, I think probably 75% may be a better target than 55%, but the reasonable minds may differ, and that's obviously there's subjective parts of that. Where there are egregious disjoints, I think individual judgment, maybe the each portion that is, if we find something's way out of line in our experience, it should probably be brought back for individual consideration on the order of a waiver or a modification. But I think charging the full fees will lead to some introspection as well as in terms of our process. In other words, the fees that are proposed here are based on the actual cost of doing business in Arroyo Grande, and I think this is an opportunity to look at that too. Is if we're charging fees that are very onerous, then that means that we're doing some level of work, and if that level of work is necessary and those fees are justified by that, then that's fine. But I think this will also engender an opportunity to look at what we're doing for those fees and make sure that that's reasonable. I think we have a general idea that what we're doing is reasonable, but it gives us an opportunity to relook at that and also to be able to justify that to the people that are paying the fees. But I don't think it's acceptable to just dump it on the taxpayers and say, here, you guys pay for it. So those are my general thoughts on it.
Just a couple of quick questions and then maybe some additional comments. One is, wasn't engineering and building already proposed at 100%? I just wanted to verify that.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. And could we do this phased approach, that where we said every year we're going to, you know, let's say we start at 55, and every year we're going to kick all the fees, 5% plus some CPI? Could we actually? I mean, it seems to me the way I understood this over the last 8 years is that we couldn't just do that. We would need to restudy every time that we use anything other than CPI or something like CPI. We have to do a new study.
Let me add on to that too, in a portion of the discussion that I overlooked, and that's the escalator. And I think a unique Arroyo Grande escalator that we would take up during the budget process and the budget review process makes the most sense. I don't think the CPI addresses the types of things that we're dealing with here. It certainly doesn't address our health care costs, while the majority of our unfunded liability for PERS and so forth does not relate from these activities. There's still a contribution to it, and I think having the council directly address that issue at budget time, in other words, what the escalator should be, is more appropriate than trying to use something like a consumer price index. I don't think we're talking about, you know, the cost of coffee or toys here. So I would be interested in that, but I'm looking at the escalator as something that goes on once we establish the fees at effectively full cost recovery today, that going forward we would apply that escalator until such time as it's necessary to do another study. And that might be another 6 or 8 years, and it would keep us from being at such a disjoint as we find ourselves today.
Absolutely. So the escalator is the key to staying at 55% or 75% right, or whatever that is. My question was related to if we wanted to escalate the recovery fee over time. And I'm not sure whether you're shaking your head, no, we can't do it, or no, I'm wrong, that Mr. No,
absolutely, I think we can. If we know that your goal is to move from 55 to, say, 75, and we want to do that over a three-year period or a five-year period, some period of time, we can build in, in addition to inflationary measures, we can build in subsidy reduction measures that get us closer to that goal, whatever that goal may be. And we can do it in a phased approach, absolutely, yes.
Okay. So I think this is probably going to have to come back, because I do think that one of the problems we have here is that we're comparing to a rate that was slowly falling behind over time. So even though we may be doubling a fee, in fact, literally, if we doubled a fee, if we were at 30% recovery and we wanted, well, it's not quite double, but let's say it was 60, if 30% we were getting to 60%, we would literally be doubling the fee just to get back to where we started. So by moving the fee to 55%, we're nearly doubling some of these fees in order just to get back to where we were. So I do think that it is reasonable that somehow over time that we would want to not only keep these fees up, but I do think that we want to move up past this 55%. My problem with just doing it as just a straight escalator across all of these classes is I'm not sure that based on the sort of subjective subsidy thinking that we've got, whether that's still the plan we want to go with. And I think that's more a question for staff than it is for us, because we weren't as involved in the decision about how these subsidies were arrived at. So I guess my inclination is directing to go, if we can do this as a phased approach, I'm going to say 5% for 5 years, a simple number, that would be a direction we could go. And if that means that, and obviously other options for the escalator. I mean, I think there's pretty good consensus that the CPI is not going to work. So, anyway, that's the direction. I think that means it has to come back, as much as I hate to have another meeting. But.
This would be my one – I think it's a very worthwhile discussion, of course, but this would be my one caution. For those fees that are already at 100%, The challenge that we have to be able to withstand between fee studies is how did we make a rational, objective decision to make an increase that still maintains us at cost recovery. So if we do that, those fees that are at 100% already, we're saying as long as we make certain adjustments, they're going to stay at 100%. If we want to escalate other fees, we have room to grow. But that would be probably would need to be at a different formula than those that are already at 100%. Because what we don't want to end up with is an excess of 100% because we simply government code wouldn't support us going there. So that would be the only thing. Not an impossible task by any means. But if you want to move from a lower percentage to a higher percentage, well, that's a great council policy, and to do it over some period of time makes sense to do it, to do that. But distinguish that from those that you've already adopted at 100%.
So my sense here is that our motion is going to be to have staff take this back and bring us back something that has that kind of language in it, that we could escalate these fees at 5% a year without escalating the ones that are already at 100% until we get to 75%. And that's in the planning department.
Because the other ones are already at 100%.
The target on the others that's presented is basically 100%. So
no, it's 100%. No, it's 100% for building and
engineering.
And engineering. I'm only talking about planning.
Only planning, right.
Yeah, so planning would be, it would be the planning areas, and some of the areas in planning are at 100%. You know, and some of them are at 80%, and, you know, somehow we're going to have to build in, you know, I think this is actually pretty complicated.
So building and engineering would seem to me to have the 100% target. We should only be looking at a COLA, if you will, which I would like to see the council adjust during each budget hearing period. And the planning is at a far reduced rate, and that has not only the cost of living, if you will, but an escalator to get us where we want to be. So there
right,
would
but,
be.
But they're saying is that it's not as simple as an escalator to get to where we want to get us towards 75%, because some of those areas are already at 100%. So I don't know how you guys are gonna put that together.
I'd like to
Mr.
also
Wolford's
weigh in
written.
On this.
Okay.
Mr. Wolford, yes.
If it's helpful, I'll share some experience with other jurisdictions who face the same issue. It's actually very common to see phasing. And essentially what they do is they set up an approach whereby if you set a minimum level of percent recovery, let's use 75%, that all fees that are below that level would be escalated until they reach the 75%. And then they would only be affected by the inflationary factor. And everything that's already above it is left alone, or if the policy was to reduce all of them to 75%, so it's even across the board, that could be done as well. There are worksheets and such set up that can sort of facilitate that. It seems very complex when we think about it, but you know, when you let Excel do the math for you, it gets a little easier. And we just set up those parameters to reach a maximum, and it's taken care of fairly easily. And then also you can apply the inflationary escalator on top of that, so that they sort of follow along as they're supposed to.
Could I take a stab at it?
You just pick the percentage and how many years you want to get, and it's fairly easy to get there.
So based on what Mr. Wolford just said, instead of bringing this whole project back, especially that we know we have building and engineering, there's a consensus about that being at 100%. I think it's really we're having a good conversation here about the planning and then the CPI and not really being happy with the CPI. So is it possible to move forward with a motion? That would include that we wanted a minimum recovery of up to 75%, that we wanted to do a phased approach of increments of 5% until, I don't know if you can leave it open-ended, until those costs are built up to 100%. so that we would actually be going to 55% to 75%, and then add the you know, inflation. I'll say it again. Add the inflation. I'm just looking down at my notes. And then also as a goal to, then I believe Director Malicote said, to build in subsidy reduction measures. So the justification would be that we're building in these subsidy reduction measures by applying a specific percentage each year in order for us to achieve whatever goal, 75% recovery on planning fees. So, I mean, I can clean that up, but I mean, is that possible that we could, you know, do both tonight? Or would it have to come back?
I'm not opposed to what you just mentioned, but you just said something. You went from 75 to 100, and that's the only part where you lost me, because I thought the goal under planning was maybe, and again, where it's up for debate, is 75%. And if it's 75%, you'd never actually be going for 100% cost.
Oh, I see what you mean. Right. Yeah, I was trying to tie in what Mr. Wolford said about that these increments would go up and until there was 100% recovery on certain fees.
Not necessarily 100% recovery, but until when we reach your policy recovery
policy
level. So whatever you want to set that policy level at, whether it's 75 or 100 or 92, okay, whatever you want it to be, mm-hmm, we can absolutely,
okay,
use an incremental approach that anything that is currently less than,
right,
that policy level,
right,
will receive a COLA or CPI or whatever,
okay,
adjustment we're overall adjustment we're making,
right,
as well as a subsidy reduction adjustment to to the goal.
So Mr. Brown was right. Thank you for that clarification. That 100% shouldn't have been in there.
So within the motion, then we would need either a recommended percentage increase or a time frame. One of those factors would have to go into the expel if you want an accomplishment in 5 years, or do it at 5%, and then whenever we get there, we'd have to want to have one of those two factors.
Okay.
Let me try making a motion and see if this will kind of summarize the objectives and discussion. I would move that we institute full cost recovery in the building and engineering areas as recommended by staff, that we institute the staff recommendation in planning subject to a 4-year move from 55% to 75% cost recovery, that each of these fees be adjusted for inflation during the annual budget consideration as a budget line item to be addressed by council, that the planning fees be unbundled and separately accounted as much as possible. I think that pretty much.
I'll second it for the purpose of discussion, because I think there's a pretty big problem with that proposal. But I do just want to. So it was when you added the unbundling part of it. So now you're changing the whole fee study and all the fee issues. So I think that piece of it, you have to start over if you're going to do that. And I don't want to start over.
Yeah, I would withdraw that portion of the motion then.
So to clarify, because I can see Kelly's struggling a little bit with it. So the motion is that we would adopt staff recommendation with two exceptions. One is that we're going to review based on budget labor, I guess, the escalator for in place of CPI. That we'll replace CPI with a number based on our actual salary increases. And that I actually said 5 years, but I'm fine with 4 years. And that we would escalate the planning area fees enough so that over the next 4 years we would reach 75% recovery.
Okay. Right. Correct.
Okay. Okay, so I see them all wanting to jump in.
Only to clarify, Community Development Director McClish would need to probably affirm this, this is going to be an average of 70. I'm assuming you're not talking about 75% across the board, because, again, as she explained, some are higher and some are lower. But perhaps the staff, when they present that back annually, can communicate what the differences are. So the
that would be such that those fees that are already at 100% recovery would not be increased, and those that are significantly less than 75% would be moved toward the 75% target over 4 years.
I also have a discussion item.
I'm not perfectly clear on exactly what you would like to use as your inflationary adjustment, so perhaps we could come up with a few recommendations for you and bring just that portion back to you of how, since it's at least a year away before we would do something with these fees, assumably, maybe we could craft a different inflationary factor. We could maybe just leave that piece of the, leave what's there or strike that piece of the resolution and bring something back to you with a recommendation on how to do an inflationary adjustment based on
I would think wages, health care, and retirement would be the major contributors to that.
For our purposes tonight, so what do we have to do to the resolution? Afraid to ask.
Could I also have a comment, discussion?
I'm sorry.
I share the same concern as Mayor Hill related to the bundling or unbundling certain fees. I understand in the structure of the fee analysis and the explanation on why they're there. So we're going to set aside the fee study and the master fee study, but we also have an opportunity related to the notification plan, so that maybe what would be helpful for our consumers is that we do a menu when they come in, and you guys might, that staff may already do this, that when someone comes in and says, I have this project, there's probably already a checklist that you give them that says, if you are going to do this project, then this is going to be a fee for this, and when. This is also going to be a fee and another reoccurring fee. So if that's already done, fine. But if you have that already as your process, then perhaps we can include in a process improvement the suggestion that the mayor has related to these bundled fees that are like the design review process from the discussions that we had. So that would be a recommendation on maybe addressing that so it's clear. Hello.
If I may offer a clarification, I think in the council's insight into this, I think you might have picked perhaps the single example that exists of this bundling. I don't think it's prevalent. I think you just happen to catch that one, and it seems to be an issue, but it's not a big component of the fee study, of planning fees or any of them. You just happen to catch the one. I think there might be that only one. Is there maybe two? But it's not a prevalent issue. I think maybe in this case, they may be able to address it simply in the administration of the fees. I just want to offer a little perspective on that. I think it seemed like it was a larger issue than it is in practice.
I was willing to take that one portion out of the motion. I would like just parenthetically to say that hopefully we're being aware of items of this nature and that they can be brought up and addressed in the future at some point as they're identified. But I'm willing to take that out of the motion for simplicity this evening.
And Okay. Mr. Mayor, a very quick consultation with the Administrative Services Director in figuring this index that's essentially kind of a wage-based index, she would have a greater comfort if it was, why don't you express it, a comfort similar but labeled a little bit differently.
I think if we adjusted based on the change in our labor cost, not exclusively health care, retirement, and whatever the third factor was, I'm sorry, I missed, but the overall change in labor costs, because salaries can also be a big piece of that as well. So I think if the inflationary factor were the change, the year-over-year change in the city's budgeted labor costs, that would be fairly easy to administer. It would be fairly straightforward and would reflect the current costs that we're experiencing in our city and not a national index.
Right. That sounds like wages, health care, and retirement. So, that, yeah. The
I think there's a few other things
costs,
in there, too.
Absolutely. I agree with you.
Okay. Perfect.
Label again?
Labor cost?
I would
labor
just consider
costs.
It labor costs, labor yes. Costs. The change in labor costs.
So if I could maybe jump in. So in looking at the resolution that's on page 8, there is a section number 2 there that talks about a CPI. So what I'm hearing is we would replace this number 2 with an annual adjustment based on the change in labor costs that Ms. Malicote described. And then we would also have to add a new section 3, I guess, that would reflect the phased increases of 5% each year until we hit the 75 that's been discussed.
In the planning.
I want to clarify. Section. I thought the motion was actually over a 4-year period of time.
It would be 4 years. Mm-hmm. To get from 55 to 75. Mm-hmm.
20%.
If 5% a year, by my back of the envelope math.
The napkin.
I don't know if I left anything out. That's what I have.
Strike number.
So we have a motion on the floor. Right?
So motion and second. May we have a roll call, please?
Mayor Hill?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
Councilmember Barnidge?
Yes.
And Mayor Pro Tem Harmon?
Yes.
Okay, thank you for staying with us through this. It was kind of a long item. I appreciate everybody's patience with it, and thank you for the assistance and all the good work on it. At this point, let's take a 10-minute break. I have about 9:25. Let's try to reconvene at 9:35. About 1 minute, please. Everybody set? Staff ready? Okay, we'll come back to order after the break. Thank you very much. Moving to item 11, old business, we have none. Item 12 is new business. 12A, and I would ask the city clerk to please introduce the item 12A.
Item 12A is consideration of appointment of voting delegates for the League of California Cities Annual Conference and direction regarding the annual conference resolution.
So moved.
Is there a staff report with that?
There can be.
So.
This next month, the annual league conference will be taking place in Long Beach. As is their tradition, they have a business meeting near the conclusion of the conference, at which time usually items that are brought up for interest to California cities are considered, and they ask for the individual councils to consider and to authorize a vote to the delegate, and usually two delegates that will be attending the conference. This year there is one item that's going to be considered. It's called Vision Zero. It's sponsored by San Jose, and it has to do with highway, nationwide highway and accident safety. And be there for staff's request that you consider the consider that motion that they're requesting, and to appoint the mayor, who's attending, as the primary delegate, and the interim city manager as a backup in the event that the mayor is unavailable for the vote.
Thank you, Bob. Any questions?
So who else should we get stuck with staying until Friday? Until Friday morning? It's you guys got to the coin? So moved.
Okay. No. Is there public comment on this item?
Where'd everybody go?
Hearing none.
I hope he fell asleep.
Is there direction to the mayor on a position for in that motion? No?
Second.
Okay, so it's been moved and seconded, and apparently this would be left to my discretion to vote on it. May we have a roll call, please?
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
Councilmember Barnidge?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Harmon?
Yes.
And Mayor Hill?
Yes. Thank you very much. Moving on then. Council communications. I want to express our pleasure of being at the opening of the pickleball arena at Soda Sports Complex. It was an interesting day. We had a number of contributions that made that a success, a bunch of individual contributors, as well as a large contribution from the Five Cities Men's Club made that possible, and we were delighted to see that open. And I would invite everyone to come down to the pickleball courts and take a look. I think you'd be very favorably impressed. The only other item I would address is a request that from the original public comment, Mr. Shiro's comment that commercial water savings could be very significant. I would ask possibly staff to come back with recommendations that the council might adopt in terms of commercial water savings requirements for especially dishwashers, as Mr. Shiro indicated, might be a significant area where the city could save water. So I would hope that we could come back with some recommendations along those lines in the near term. And then moving, Councilmember Guthrie.
Yeah, I do actually have a request of staff as well. In fact, we may be able to incorporate these two. I'd like to request the staff bring to council agenda in the near future review of the potential trigger points discussed in our last council meeting. Example, 10,000 or 5,000 acre feet at Lake Lopez, and what our response will be when we see saltwater intrusion markers or significant changes in well depth. That discussion should include estimates of how much water is available and for how long, plus whatever additional water like emergency state water or conservation measures like a moratorium might be available to enhance or extend our water supply as the drought continues. I think we could also include that item as well in here if staff has time to do that. And we probably should also include exactly what is stage 2 drought
situation looks like if it is declared in the future. And there was the comment, just to add on to it, that that cash for grass is unavailable. If that's actually true, because I thought that we now that it's funded, we could restart it again. What we might replace it with if there are no more cash for grass opportunities. But I suspect that there are still more. So I don't want to get too into the discussion, but those are items I'd like to see staff bring back. I've communicated to them in advance as well.
And just as part of that whole discussion, I think, Bob, you and I might have talked about it, and that is what the cost of water would be if we have to end up getting it from other sources if we run out of water.
Right.
And then on that same staff, I mean, I think that staff was working on this as well, but, you know, the gray water, the gray water issue that we voted down a couple, or we didn't recommend it. I mean, any water conservation things that we can dust off and relook at again, I think that can all be encompassed into the same staff report.
Mayor Pro Tem, any further comments?
No, but I would support the Mr. Guthrie's suggestion on bringing the more comprehensive report back related to the things he outlined. And as far as my council communications, I don't have any specifics. Thank you.
Okay. No other council communications? Moving to community comments and suggestions. Any last comments? Hearing none, then we have closed session items this evening. And I would ask District Legal Counsel to please introduce the closed session items.
Certainly. This evening in closed session, the City Council will be considering conference with legal counsel, anticipated litigation pursuant to Section 54956.9D4, two potential cases. Council will also be discussing the public employee performance evaluation pursuant to Government Code Section 54957 for the interim city manager.
Thank you. And I've been briefed on the general application of one of those issues, and I have a personal conflict of interest with that, so I will be recusing myself from any participation in that portion of the discussion. With that, we'll adjourn to closed session.